a doozy today.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
They say sometimes God gives us blessings in strange little ways we don't recognize until later. But a lot of folks that work here have pointed out that some of my best radio broadcasts are once a year or so if I have a cold or something, because it makes me slow down. It makes me actually be more patient when I do and to cover more information. And boy, there is incredible evidence of massive systemic fraud in Iowa. And even mainstream media basically says the stuff that went on is impossible. Hillary winning 6 coin tosses in a row to be given the extra delegate, because if she wouldn't have won those, Bernie would have won. And on video, them taking massive stacks of Hillary votes that had already been counted and recounting them in front of everybody, people say, hey, stop that. And they go, you'll have a chance later to dispute it. And Sanders is doing that. It is just crazy what's going on. The big news is Donald Trump came in second place. That's not big news. Roger Stone, who's in studio with us, went on the 23rd and probably going to be on today or tomorrow via Skype to break down what's going on. He's the original campaign manager of Trump. He wanted Trump to come in after Iowa, never wanted him to get in early. And a lot of the strategy is used by Trump. A lot of it isn't. So I heard Trump get up last night and say, you know, a lot of my friends told me not to even try in Iowa, but I did it. Well, I was told that months ago by Stone here in the office. He said, no, we expect Trump to lose Iowa, but he wants to go ahead and have a strong showing and try to take it. That's why he's 18 to 20 points now ahead in New Hampshire, 30-something points ahead of his nearest rival in Michigan. He's the only Republican that can clearly take New York. It's one of the juiciest, what, third largest delegate block. But the media, CNN, Fox, all of it, watching it last night, and I was doing my own live coverage, obviously, from home. The crew was here doing a wonderful job for 4 hours covering it for you, the viewers and listeners, with expanded InfoWars Nightly News. And it was, well, that's it. His mystique is gone. He'll begin plunging now. It's over, when he's leading in every other state massively but Iowa. And why is that? Kurt Nemo wrote a story that is so incredibly important if you want to understand what's happening. And it's up on InfoWars.com. And it deals with the fact of why it doesn't matter that he lost. Here's why Trump lost Iowa and why it doesn't matter. Everything will change during the primaries in open voting states. That's right. Iowa, you have to be a registered Democrat to be in the caucus, or you have to be a registered Republican longstanding. It's very elitist, very exclusive, not inclusive. And so the big giant swing group of blue-collar workers of every race, color, and creed, entrepreneurs, blacks in double the numbers they are for other Republican candidates, are in major polls saying they support Trump. And so that's why he lost. Now, there is evidence of Microsoft fraud, and that's not me saying that. They even put it in the news now in our face. It's like when I caught Mike Hansen and Richard Reeves election fraud 16 years ago, and we went and fought it in court in the county commissioners. And after a month-long process, the state board of elections said, yes, there was fraud. Looks like there was a big mistake. Looks like this election could be in question, but we're going to go ahead and certify it anyways. I was watching the fraud with my eyeballs at the election center. I was watching Pat Buchanan get 65, 70% of the votes and running around the different precinct tables where we were stacking up the Scantrons, shoving them in the computer that was being put on data tape. But anyways, getting back to what I was saying, I thought I got really depressed last night when Trump lost. I thought, why? I already know this. And I started getting chills and felt bad. I stuck a thermometer in my mouth, had like 100 temperature, and I went, thank God, because I never get depressed. And I was like, this is horrible. You know, right when you get sick, it hits you and you don't know you're sick. I'd just been hit by it, and I was like, this is horrible. I'm so depressed. And then I figured out I was sick. tyranny.
You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Well, wild horses couldn't drag me away from this live Tuesday edition, the second day of February 2016. Richard Reeves and crew will be joining us for a final report from Iowa in the aftermath. We're also going to have Larry Klayman, who is the guy that helped impeach Clinton the first time, who's moving forward against his unconstitutional executive orders, opening the borders, shutting off power plants, and going after our guns, and more. Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist, will be popping in, joining us as well. If you're an astute viewer and listener to the show, you'll probably notice I'm going to be a lot calmer today, which in general means a better transmission. When I have my full faculty, I kind of overheat and get too much going through my mind, and then the broadcast is somewhat train wreckish. But the once a year or so that I am sick or under the weather, I go ahead and go on air. It's better than lying in bed with the chills. I have a good, focused overall broadcast. That said, if I get really sick, because I almost threw up on the way to work, and I'm not complaining, I don't need get-well cards, I'm just explaining why I'll be a little bit different today. It's because it's about 10:30. I'm covering the caucuses, actually from a friend's house, and the crew's all here, doing the live breakdown, doing a wonderful job. And so I got home and stuff after it about 10:30, and I felt really depressed. And I was like, it isn't that Donald Trump lost. We knew he was going to lose Iowa, and I'm going to go over why. But he still wins by going there to begin with, and we're going to break that down. And I got in bed and had the chills, and I got back up, went in the kitchen, got a thermometer, stuck it in my mouth, had about 100-degree temperature. And I'm not going off at some long story about that. It's just funny that when you first get sick, you don't recognize you're sick. Kind of like our nation is really sick. But we're just now beginning to realize that we have basically cancer, not a cold. And so I was really glad when I was sick, because it wasn't that I was super depressed over the state of the country. But I tell you, watching mainstream media sit up there and manipulate everything, and to watch the crowds being brainwashed did get me a little bit upset. And then to watch Fox News and CNN and others crowing from the highest rooftop that this is the end of the mystique of Donald Trump, and, oh my gosh, you know, he should have won handily in Iowa. There's a lot of facets here, but there's a story up on InfoWars.com. Then we're getting into all the fraud, and boy, it's never been more blatant. I mean, it's crazy town. There's so much of it, and so many raw videos, and so many admissions that it's staggering. It's staggering. We're going to try to get to all of that. Then the world news, then the Second Amendment news, the economy news. We're going to try to get to it all. But there's a really important article by Curt Nemo. Here's why Trump lost Iowa and why it doesn't matter. Everything will change during the primaries in open voting states. And then he breaks through all the top analyst groups, the Upshots, Mercury Analytics, and a bunch of others, the IVN poll and others, showing that Trump basically would have gotten way more votes than Hillary total. And obviously he wasn't running against Hillary. She was running for the Democratic delegate, and he's running for the Republican. The point is, in a popular election, he destroys her. And in Iowa, you can't be an independent, a libertarian, or a Reagan Democrat and cross over and vote for Trump. And that's why they're so scared of him, why the Bilderberg group's so scared of him. He has double the voters in major polls from the black community. He has got huge amounts of women that want to vote for him. He's doing very well with Hispanics and Latinos in major polls compared to other Republicans except for Marco Rubio. So he is seen more as a populist. So let's just get past who Donald Trump is, whether he's good, bad, or indifferent. I tend to think good. He is this populist stalwart. And he's a symbol of that, and a symbol of that uprising. And the system is so elitist in Iowa, and I'm not bashing Iowa in general, but their caucus is so elitist, it's not an open primary, it's not a primary, that's why Roger Stone, we may be able to have pop in today, probably tomorrow, but regardless, he's coming in a few weeks in studio, really the shadow advisor of Trump, the top advisor, basically, that he told them, don't go to Iowa, you're going to lose. This is 2 years ago. And that's now come out in the newspaper and Politico and others. In an article, How Trump Did It, Stone said, do it after Iowa. That's totally rigged. For somebody that's a populist, you know, come in later in New Hampshire. And who knows who was right? The point is, Trump thought, well, I don't care. I'm going to go be a spectacle. This is all in the Politico article. And what's cool about the Politico article is this is everything I was told inside baseball behind the scenes as well, but even more, not just by Stone, but by others. Because I run into a lot of famous folks I know and who are friends with Donald Trump, and they go, don't you know Donald Trump's one of us, brother? He's just, you're underground. He's going over the top. Donald Trump knows what's going on. He wants to defeat the globalist. I was told this in the last month after he came on by two prominent people. One a TV star, one a movie star. That know Donald Trump. Then I ran into somebody else. He was talking about what a patriot Donald Trump is behind the scenes. I'm going to leave it at that. Well, that was Jesse James that said that, but he wasn't talking about Trump being a listener. But he was talking about what a patriot is, pro-gun, you know, them hanging out years ago, you know, a decade ago, stuff like that. And so that's why I lean more towards Trump, because I have prominent people going, no, man, he knows all of it. He's screwing with the elite big time. That's why Bilderberg and Davos are like, do whatever you have to shut him down. And so the talking point was, Trump, the mystique is gone. I flipped to the next channel. Trump, the mystique is gone. Next channel. Well, he had this aura of invincibility. It's gone. That's a talking point, people. His own insiders said, you're not going to win Iowa. You'll probably be in third or fourth place because you're seen as a populist. And it's hardcore Republicans and hardcore Democrats there that get into their party status and their petty power. I mean, let's just talk about it. And a bunch of fake evangelicals that are Pharisees. And by that, I grew up an evangelical Southern Baptist. You know, we went to both types of churches. A lot of good people in there, wonderful people. I identify as that. But the political ones, they'll get mad if you got rock and roll music or drink a beer on Saturday night, but they're not complaining about human animal chimeras and mass abortion. And I mean, they're not really out there pushing. They're not pushing for Obama to be impeached. They sit up there like in Christ time and pray in public and talk about how pious they are and how they follow every law. And really, it's because they're, a lot of them, egomaniacs, and I'm tired of it. And so, yes, those are the type of folks, because Trump won't put on an act. You know, and says the Bible's my second favorite book and stuff like that. As a joke, folks. You know, his own book's his favorite, art of the deal. They just don't like the reality of it and the joking around. They want to just feel like they're perfect and they're going to heaven and everything's okay as long as they pick the most outwardly conservative person there is. So there's the breakdown on that front. But the article is so important because all the independents, all the libertarians, they couldn't vote for Donald Trump. And here's the other good news. There's video of this. It's up on Infowars.com. Bernie Sanders supporters all over chanting, this is out of Politico too, Sanders rally chant, she's a liar, and stuff like arrest her. So that's hardcore Democrats who aren't evil people. They just believe socialism is going to work. They see Walmart, you know, making hundreds of billions of dollars, and you know, they see the country collapsing. So they think, well, let's try something different. At least that's a populist movement that means well. Sanders is bad news, but nothing compared to Hillary. So that's basically what's going on here. And later, I want to go over this incredible article, How Trump Did It. We'll also get into the latest developments with the migrants coming in, just raping and attacking and having sex with 11-year-old girls, and the police say it's their culture, let them do it. I mean, it is just crazy. But before we do that, let's go ahead and get into the fraud. And I'm just going to mention the fraud and then burrow into it after the break. And just so you know, we had all this on Infowars.com last night and this morning, but I'm going to go with the mainstream articles for everybody so you understand that this isn't Alex Jones saying this, okay? Bernie Sanders is the London Guardian. Bernie Sanders wants raw vote count released after tight finish in Iowa caucuses. Dramatic clash with Hillary Clinton for Democratic presidential nomination is a sign public want change, says a left-wing senator. Hillary Clinton has the most statistically improbable coin toss luck ever. In fact, it's never happened in the NFL that a team won six coin tosses in a row. in six games. We have articles breaking that down. It is basically 1 out of 100 shot. Oh, but it just kept happening last night. There's video. They'll count Hillary votes and mark them and then just count them again for everybody. Everybody goes, wait a minute. You just counted those. They go, don't worry about it. It's like the Goodfellas, don't worry about it. That's up on Infowars.com, Steve Watson article. So she does six coin tosses, her representative does, with the Sanders people, and magically wins all six. You don't think they had a special coin that they then slide a hand to the other coin back that's a real coin with a weighted coin that'll flip 9 times out of 10 the way you want? Oh, all six to win that delegate. In a row. Impossible. Just like we predicted the Microsoft app failed at the key precincts where she was losing. And then magically they had to hand call them in at the very places where they counted the votes in front of everyone for Hillary repeatedly over and over again. You understand? Oh, six coin tosses. Oh, get the delegate. Oh, counter ballots and then flip them again and count them again. Oh, and then magically the computer fails so you can call them in to Microsoft. Oh, how convenient. And by the way, that's just part of it. It's all coming up straight ahead. This is how stupid they think we are. Hillary Clinton is way behind Sanders. I've seen polls everywhere. I talk to people on the ground. Almost no one supports her. Okay? And so, who knows really how big a failure she is? In the Drudge poll, Sanders had 28%. She had 0.88. And that's a free-for-all, sure, but it shows who people want in free-for-all. I tell you what, here's what I'm going to do. This is a short little six-minute segment. I'm going to come back in a long segment, get to the election fraud and more. I mean, you've got Marco Rubio in many polls 15 points lower than what he got last night. And then magically, because Microsoft is his second biggest donor, we already have the hanky-panky with Hillary going on. Why not with Rubio? I mean, when you start seeing six coin tosses in a row go to Hillary and them double counting her balance and still certifying and then the Microsoft app breaks, so they have to call in the numbers. And then Marco Rubio does double better than what polls showed he was. Oh, but Donald Trump gets exactly what the polls said. On and on and on and on. Oh, there's USA Today, in case you just tuned in. I think I'm making that up. Microsoft app used to tally votes at Iowa caucuses fails in some areas. And guess where we have the exact fraud videos? Oh, how magical. The key disputed areas, the key votes that made her win, the key areas is where it happens. Oh, it didn't happen somewhere where she was winning by a landslide. It didn't happen. No. No, it happened right where it needed to happen. Isn't that just special? There's a reason Congress has a 9% approval rating, and in a Gallup poll 2 weeks ago, the public sees the government as the number one threat, because it's not our government. It's a bunch of cronies at every level screwing everybody over. And they don't have to have every precinct bought or have their people in place everywhere. They just got to have them in key areas that they've already demographically broke down, and then the fix is in. We've caught them over and over again, red-handed. We have the testimonies in Congress and at the different legislatures where the very designers of Diebold Systems and others said, no, it was for fraud. We stole elections. I have seen it with my own eyeballs with other companies. And you're seeing it with your own eyeballs now. Now, before I go any further, let me just tell you what else is coming up after I cover this in the next segment. UBS bank shares plunge as rich investors withdraw money. AP. Yahoo to announce job cuts. Report. AFP. Google parent Alphabet passes Apple market cap at the open. Google search probe by U.S. should get new look. Utah says. robo-advisors, just like your robo-cars, try to calm investors' nerves. Isn't that sweet, Financial Times? And here's the most important one I'm going to cover when we get back into this, Financial Times. Top U.S. financial groups hold secret summits on long-termism. Oh, and how they're going to rig the markets. You know, before they would just deny all that. Now they just throw it in your face. Yeah, the stock market's rigged. Yeah, the currency's rigged. Yeah, the interest rates are rigged. Yeah, we put poison in your water. Yeah. Yeah, the insert on the Gardasil says it doesn't help you and can kill you, but we're not going to tell you that when you go get the shot. Because Hillary Clinton loves you, right? Right? Because she's a woman, right? Yeah, right. National debt hits $19 trillion. We're going to get to all that today. Here on the New World Order Express Elevator to Hades. But before I go any further today, we are running daily specials this week. Each day, just one day on something. And this is one of the best specials ever. And you get great products on top of it. It helps fund this operation, so it's a win-win. 24-hour flash sale at InfoWarsStore.com and InfoWarsLife.com. Get Silver Bullet for 15% off and 10% off with AutoShip. You heard me right. We now have AutoShip on all InfoWarsLife.com products. We don't have it on some of the items that we can't always keep in stock, like certain seed banks and things like that, but we do on most products now in the store. So sign up with one click for auto ship, meaning in a month or so, you can always cancel whenever you want with one click. You're going to be reordering, and you get 10% off on top of 15% off Silver Bullet, the highest quality colloidal silver. And there's a bunch of other specials as well. Silver Bullet is considered to be a powerful 30 parts per million in a base of deionized water and stores for years. Whether it's economic meltdown or any other collapse, experts admit colloidal silver is essential to have on hand. Get Silver Bullet for 15% off and save 10% off when you use AutoShip at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com while supplies last. And we also basically sold out of DNA Force. Tomorrow we're going to have a special on the 100 bottles that are left, roughly. It'll be a month and a half or more comes in, unfortunately. That when you sign up for AutoShip, you'll be able to get that discounted yet again as well. But that's tomorrow coming up. InfoWarsLife.com or 888-253-3139. And you're crazy if you don't have a bunch of high-quality colloidal silver. Ours is made by the top lab in the country, private label for Whole Foods, you name it. And we sell ours on average for less than they do, the exact same bottle, just different label. That's how we operate. We're free market. We're very vicious about it. We even undercut Amazon on many of our products now. We're just that free market. I mean, we're really cool people when it comes to Americana. We'll be right back.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to your life. I want to do this on air for TV viewers. I will narrate it, describe it for radio listeners across the United States and the world. One of the clear evidences of fraud last night is that Hillary was going to lose if she didn't get the 6 coin tosses in a row. It was supposed to go to Sanders, but she magically got the 6 coin tosses for the disputed delegate because they were in a dead heat. She won by 0.2%. And that story's up on InfoWars.com from Kit Daniels. And then, of course, the craziness just continued from there, where she'd have ballots already counted for her, and they would double count them right in front of people. And then they wouldn't put that in the app because it had already been tallied, so it would show it as fraudulent, so they, quote, called it in. It's all on video. It's all on InfoWars.com. And even mainstream media covers it and goes, wow, this is kind of weird. Let's just move along. Now, the way they could do this is sleight of hand. It's basically you would just hire somebody who's trained, not even as a magician, but just how to do the sleight of hand, where you have the coin that is basically identical to the other one, but weighted to where it falls on a certain side almost every time. And you flip that, and then if the other side is using another coin, because it varies, then they have a normal coin and they fail. So let's see, because it's statistically around 1%. We have an article breaking it down. To win 6 coin flips in a row, that's even in USA Today, you have to, it's like winning a Powerball lottery or something. It's ridiculous. So let's go ahead and do it. Here's, and we're showing video for TV viewers of them actually flipping the coins. Here we go. So let's say 6 heads and Hillary in a row, she gets that disputed delegate that if she wouldn't have gotten it, she would have lost to Bernie Sanders. So here we go. Oh, heads. She got it. First one. Let me show folks. Heads. Let's document, Cam. There you go. So she just won the first toss here. Let's mark that right here. That's one for Hillary. Yes, she is a lucky lady, huh? Let's do the second one here. Hey, lucky lady, she did it again. Oh, whoa. She got tails on number 3. What do you know? What do you know? So out of 6, heads, and this is tails. So we got one there. Let's keep tallying here. Let's do it again. Oh, tails again right there. So that's head-to-head, 2 heads, 2 tails tied. And we got 2 more coin tosses. In fact, this will be deciding, but I guess if she didn't get all 6, it went into more coin tosses. Up, tails again. Sorry, Hillary. Sorry, sweetie. Now, if you don't get this one, it's totally tied, she'll lose. But remember, she just got all 6 in a row, so there was never any doubt. Up, tails again. Sorry, Hillary. Sorry, you don't get the delegate. Bernie Sanders does. But see, that's in the real world. That's in the real world. Here, let's just keep flipping. Oh, she got heads that time. Here, let's just keep flipping. See, in the real world, there's chance. Heads again. In the real world, that's, oh, tails. See, in the real world, it's 50-50. But see, not in Hillary Clinton world. Oh, tails again. Not in Hillary Clinton world. So just to illustrate how ridiculous it would be to have 6 in a row, and then all this other hanky-panky, and the app fails magically, so that you don't have the regular tallying system. It just goes into some black hole and phone calls are made. And then we learn who won. At least 6 precincts across the state resulted in a tie. Bernie Sanders chose heads. Hillary had tails. So we just basically flip what they did. And then magically 6 in a row. Isn't that just special? All right, let's stop right there. And then all you got to do is have the 2 coins. One's loaded to heads, one's loaded to tails, be able to do that. But I'm sure this is an accident. I'm just joking around. Now, let's expand on that and go through these articles. And then I want to open the phones up, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. 9231. We also have a whole bunch of clips that I haven't gotten to yet that we're going to be breaking down as well. But let's go over it. Bernie Sanders wants raw vote count released after tight finish in Iowa caucuses. You guys bring me another video list. I can't find mine. Thank you. Hillary Clinton has the most statistically improbable coin toss luck ever. And then it goes over the fact that it's 1.56% out of 100 that you could do that. Sometimes Iowa Democrats award caucus delegates with a coin flip. That's USA Today explaining how this all happened. See, a lot of times the technology is the cover. The technology is the front. To say it breaks and then the tweak in it is the fraud. Microsoft app used to tally votes at Iowa caucuses fails in some areas, including the area where on video they count Hillary stacks of ballots twice and say, don't worry about it. That video is up on Infowars.com. And again, here's MarketWatch reporting on the same thing. Coin toss broke 6 Clinton-Sanders deadlocks in Iowa, and Hillary won each time. Oh. And then it's her with a maniac face there with all of her cult followers. I mean, what a group of scum. I mean, just no end to these people. Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders because of a coin toss, London Telegraph. So just, you know, that really happened. I've shown you three or four mainstream news articles. It's crazy. And there's the Infowars.com article from Steve Watson. Clinton voter fraud in action, question mark. Hillary wins the six coin tosses and dodgy hand count. The footage appears to verify this, with the Clinton camp admitting that they did not do a successful full count, that they just added the new people who were already a stack of Hillary supporters. Does that add up right? One of the organizers is heard asking the caucus chair, who replies, "I don't think so." Nervously, a challenge by Sanders supporters for a third count was rejected, and Clinton was handed a victory. This monumental cluster bleep, no, it's on purpose, was just one of 1,600 caucus sites around the state of Iowa. Who knows what went on elsewhere? In another video, Clinton and Sanders supporters are seen remonstrating with caucus organizers in Ames who are attempting to move the caucus outside, refusing to start counting votes because their building was too full. So basically, the caucus, they have to hand count everybody depending on what side they're sitting on. Well, when it came time to do the second count, the numbers were off. The first vote breakdown was like 215 Sanders, 215 Clinton, 26 O'Malley, 8 undecided, 459 total. And in the second video, 232 Clinton, 224 Sanders, 456 total. So somehow they lost three people, but Clinton's vote went up by 14. And it just goes on and on. So basically what happened was Hillary's team didn't like and didn't take the time to do a full recount. Instead, she just added the new people who joined the second vote, which clearly wasn't an accurate count. And it's just stuff like that. And then, oh, the app breaks right then and they've got to call it in. I'm not going to talk about that anymore, but it's ridiculous. I want to take your calls on that subject. Oh, almost forgot one other one. There's so many. Rubio basically doubling what he showed in polls, but everybody else's poll numbers being pretty accurate when he's the establishment candidate. Microsoft is his second biggest donor, and Microsoft's been caught in hanky-panky all over the country over and over again with their software and electronic voting machines. Well, Carson accuses Cruz camp of foul play, told voters Carson was dropping out. Well, one of the heads of the campaign did put out the tweet that Carson had left and gone home and basically given up. And so that everybody should then just vote for Cruz. And I'm not against Ted Cruz, but you read this, it is dirty. Steve King says from the Cruz camp, "Carson looks like he's out. Iowans need to know before they vote. Most will go Cruz, I hope." And then he has a link to it. Cruz precinct captain Tim Osborne says Trump was for abortion, gay marriage, and amnesty 6 months ago. That's just the kind of stuff they were putting out. And so it continues, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll see what unfolds on that front. We'll take some of your phone calls here in just a moment. But do you think they're going to get rid of the Microsoft app now that it failed conveniently? Oh, no, it hasn't failed. It succeeded in exactly what it was supposed to do. In the Twilight Zone, Kookland, where Hillary wins six coin tosses consecutively on the same night in disputed precincts to be given the extra delegate, securing herself the win. And this is what all the electronic voting experts have told me and all the experts on basic election fraud, Bev Harris, you name it, over the years, is that when somebody's winning by 10, 20, 30 points, it's hard to steal it. But if Hillary's a few points behind, what they'll do is they'll have a dead heat. This is always the sign throughout the night, dead heat. The whole night, it's just dead heat. As they just balance it like that to see if they need to steal it at the end. Because she's behind, but they're running scams, just keep her right there to see how many they need at the end. So the big tell, I've known this for 20 years, is when you see people dead even the whole time, the fix is in. Oh, okay, I'm sure she won six coin tosses in a row and then magically, ballots that weren't counted for her got counted twice and put back in, and then magically the app failed right then at a whole bunch of precincts. They had to phone it in. Okay, sure. And, of course, she didn't lie about the emails or Benghazi or Fast and Furious or Watergate, ripping off old people, or the cattle futures where you invest a few thousand and get hundreds of thousands back when no one else had ever done that. I mean, there's nothing going on with Don Tyson, nothing going on with these people. These are good people. Hillary's a woman, after all. She cares about women. Mentally ill women who want to go associate their personal power with the gang member leader. They're as big an idiot as somebody that joins a white supremacist gang, a black supremacist gang, a Hispanic supremacist gang, because they don't have father figures, and they go, you know, join it because the father figure cares about you. No, the father figure doesn't care about you and is using you, dummies. Well, this is the mommy figure. This is where they fantasize. I mean, I've seen these female Clinton supporters just glide around on C-SPAN at events, and I've seen them in person just power tripping, and they'll go, you're just afraid of a woman in charge. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'd love to have a constitutionalist as president. I could care less. But the point is, that's not what's going on. And the cliche of, there wouldn't be any violence in the world if it wasn't for men. We're the species. We defend women. We've been a warlike species. Women are the ones that demand you go out and get the living space. You go out and take over. That's just the culture. It's like blaming male honeybees for stinging people and not the females. It's just the species. It's moronic. It's idiotic. It's all just divide and conquer with mental midgets, pseudo-intellectuals, and the like. Okay, I'm going to get into the economy after we take calls, and I'm going to get into the incredible news with the asylum seekers. These headlines, this is every day now. Minors as young as 11 years old married when seeking asylum in Norway, and the police and all these articles say, no, they're allowed to marry them and have sex with them because it's their culture. Forget the federal and state laws in these countries. Migrants attack elderly Germans trying to protect woman from harassment on Munich train video. Mayor's response to children being sexually harassed by migrants, don't provoke them. So first they told women, basically just, you know, let them rape you or don't dress provocatively. But now, the mayor of the town, Bad Shalom, prompted fury. Well, I'm going to get into that coming up. John Cleese says political correctness will lead to an Orwellian nightmare. Oh, that's the plan, brother. That's like in Goldfinger when he says, do you expect me to talk? He goes, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. It's like Seinfeld and John Cleese are like, this is tyranny. This is crazy. Well, stop it now. What are you thinking? And they're like, what are we thinking? We're taking over. It's premeditated, bro. It's to kill original liberalism forever. And then have a fascist right-wing backlash to it that actually absorbs it all and then mixes it in with Islamicist. Islamicists, because they're so fascist, are the replacement for the West, okay? They are the boot stomping on the human face forever, a la 1984. In fact, we're going to go to break and come back with Kevin Santiago, Nick, Tay, Ryan, and others. Since I mentioned John Cleese, let's cue up the John Cleese political correctness can lead to an Orwellian nightmare and play that clip as we get ready to go to break and come back with your phone calls. I'm Alex Jones. Stay with us.
I'm offended every day. For example, the British newspapers every day offend me with their laziness, their nastiness, and their inaccuracy. But I'm not going to expect someone to stop that happening. I should just simply speak out about it. You know, sometimes when people are offended, they want somebody to just come in and say, right, stop that, to whoever is offending them. And of course, as a former chairman of the BBC once said, there are some people one would wish to offend. And I think there's truth in that too. So the idea that you have to be protected from any kind of uncomfortable emotion is one I absolutely do not subscribe to. And a fellow that I helped write two books about psychology and psychiatry, he was a renowned psychiatrist in London called Robin Skinner, said something very interesting to me. He said, if people can't control their own emotions, then they have to start trying to control other people's behavior. And when you're around super sensitive people, you cannot relax and be spontaneous because you have no idea what's going to upset them next. And that's why I've been warned recently, don't go to most university campuses, because the political correctness has been taken from being a good idea.
No, they're racist. They want to attack you, bro.
Mean, particularly to people who are not able to look after themselves very well. That's a good idea, to the point where any kind of criticism of any individual or group can be labeled cruel.
Can't even have
the whole point about humor, the whole point about comedy, and believe you me, I've thought about this, is that all comedy is critical.
So we have an uptight British guy explaining to us that we should have more freedom.
Inclusive joke, like, how'd you make God laugh? Answer, tell him your plans.
By the way, you know, Yale did get rid of those professors that said we can't ban costume parties.
It's saying we all have all these plans, which probably won't come. And isn't it funny how we still believe they're going to happen? So that's a very inclusive joke. It's still critical. All humor is critical. If you start saying, we mustn't criticize.
The system got the real left to buy into their tyranny for the greater good.
Humor gives a sense of proportion.
And now they're panicking.
And then, as far as I'm concerned, you're living in 1984.
Yeah, you're living in 1984. In fact, let's come back and finish the last part. We are back in this segment. The next, I'm going to go into your calls. Also, when Wayne Madsen's on with us, we will be. Keith, Santiago, Nick, Tay, Ryan, others we're going to go to you. You know, I rarely get sick compared to my friends and a lot of folks I know. And it's because I try to eat non-GMO, I try to drink filtered water. But when I feel sickness coming on, and I did have a fever last night, I go, in case it's bacterial, but this stuff also has been known to hit viruses, and I mix it with water, colloidal silver. And I've also had, you know, surface infections and things like cutting your toe at the beach or whatever. And it's really helped me out. We have 15% off on Silver Bullet, colloidal silver, 24 hours only at InfoWarsLife.com. Buy it, sell 15% off separately. If you also want to sign up for auto ship, you get 10% off on top of that as well. I don't take a little silver all the time, but I definitely take when people are sick around me or when I start to get a sore throat. All right, let's go ahead and go to your calls. Who's been holding the longest? Let's go ahead and talk to Keith in New York. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Alex.
Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Welcome.
Alex, listen, thanks for having me on. I just want to let you know you woke me up about 10 years ago. Been following you almost every day since. I think you're one of the most bravest men and the most noblest person I've ever seen.
Well, please.
And I just want to commend. I want to commend you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you, brother. I'm trying to just defend my family, so I'm just doing my duty, but thank you, sir. Go ahead.
You're doing a great job. Now, listen, I live up here in New York. I owned a metal recycling company that this administration or the economy just destroyed. I had a great business. I was making a ton of money, taking care of my daughter, putting her through school, and about a year ago, the metal commodities crashed, went down the drain. I lost my business, and I've basically been out of work. I've been looking for work. I'm pretty much stuck. So that's why I'm so into this election. Now, my point is...
But Obama said that the economy's never been better.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm telling fables, right? I'm sorry.
I mean, you know, Hillary won six coin tosses in a row. There's nothing going on here. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, the economy's great if you're Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But, you know what, for an average guy like me, I worked my butt off. Believe me, Alex, I work hard.
Well, he says you can't have a car in air conditioning. Only he can, because that's liberal. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
But no, listen, my point is, this election thing, I've been following this thing from the beginning because this is, I think, one of the most important elections in our time, as you said, okay? Now, and I'm thinking to myself for months and months, the only way they're going to grab this from Trump is to do shenanigans and shady stuff. And now, last night, I was watching your live feed, and I went on the Huffington Post website, and right there, there's an article about Bill Gates manipulating the computer system when he was in school or something to be in a class with all women.
You know, I forgot that, Bill Gates has hacked before. Did he hack Iowa? That's a great headline just to put the facts in. And obviously, of course they did. They were at every level running ops. I mean, listen, he's even more evil than George Soros. He runs the weather modification, the secret vaccine programs, the chimeras. I mean, you name it. He is a science fiction villain out of the Fantastic Four or something. I mean, you cannot make it up.
Alex, you know, these people aren't going to, they're going to do everything they can not to lose their power. And it's just
yeah, it must be fun to be a psychopathic supervillain. I mean, you know, for him. I mean, just imagine. I can't even look at him. Get him off, please. Yeah, there it is. That's Bill Gates hacked his high school's computers to be placed in all girls' classes. And again, that's little hokey stuff they put out, like Warren Buffett eats ice cream. It's all just PR bull.
Alex, I just want to thank you for everything you're doing. And I hope we can get hopefully Trump in there.
I hear you.
His economy going.
Do you think New York? Do you think a lot of Democrats will cross over to Trump in New York?
Absolutely. I think Trump's a hero around here. Everybody I talk to, it's all Trump. But once again, you know, they can manipulate these voting machines like slot machines, and it makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, according to Politico, that hates him, and I've been told this behind the scenes before it was in Politico. When he committed to this, he'll basically be destroyed if he doesn't win. He knows it. He got cold feet, actually, and almost didn't do it. But once he committed, he's all the way. And so that's what's going on. And the word is Trump is aware of the New World Order, the whole nine yards, and he actually wants to save this country. We know Hillary doesn't. We know Bernie doesn't. We know Jeb Bush doesn't. We know Marco Rubio is bought and paid for by the elites. They're all backing.
GCN.
We'll be back.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
And if you don't resist tyrants, you will be run over and made a slave.
The poets tell how Poncho fell and left his living in a cheap hole.
Merle Haggard.
The desert's quiet, Cleveland's cold. And so the story ends, we're told. Poncho needs your prayers, it's true.
Save a few for Lefty Save too.
For Lefty too.
He only did
what he had to do.
And now he's grown old.
And now he's grown old.
I got some Hag loaded up on my stereo at home. Let's go to Santiago in Iowa, from the state where it all went down. Santiago, thanks for holding, sir. You're on the air worldwide.
Yes, sir, Alex. Yeah. You know, they pulled the same thing with the last caucus in Iowa.
I know. It gives me a headache to, like, have to remember and pull it all up. They run the same scam over and over again like a dog going back to its vomit. Go ahead.
Right. And 4 or 5 years ago, National Public Radio, one of their comedy talk show guys, the guy that sounded like Bob Newhart, I can't remember his name, he interviewed the retiree from the caucus manager at Iowa State University, and it was hilarious, except to the host of the show, because this guy that retired from rigging this stuff, and he'd been doing it out of Iowa State University and recruiting college kids for 15 years, but he was retired, and he says, I got nothing to lose, now I'm retired.
I remember that interview. What was the name of it? Because it's something like Iowa caucus ahead admits fraud. What was that interview? I mean, I forget, because I remember seeing that.
Well, this was a radio talk show on National Public Radio.
I remember playing clips of it back at the time. And here's the deal. Just like Hide the Decline at the big university over in England, where they were running thousands of other universities. Remember when the Russian hackers got in and you know, they all like, Earth's getting colder. We got to cover up the fraud. And it was them communicating with the U.S., Australia, Germany, you name it, how to run the fraud. And you think about these universities, people just think they're universities. No, they've got like command bases of criminals taking over. And now they're saying you have no free speech. You're basically slaves. I mean, these are cult brainwashing camps. And when you come to face-to-face with that, of course they're banning free speech on the campuses. Of course, because they've got large pockets. I've had a lot of professors on exposing this, like Hamamoto, where they know what they're doing. Sorry, go ahead.
One other thing, and I'll let you go. This corruption in Iowa voting goes down to county level. And if you're not one of them, they may not even let you vote. And that's, I've experienced that when I was in Iowa. Right now I'm sitting on the Iowa-Minnesota border in a blizzard, but I am very familiar with Iowa politics, corporate farming. It's not really evangelistic. It's Monsanto and Chuck Grassley.
No, I understand. I wasn't. Let's throw this out there, though. They think we're so stupid that they steal these things in front of us, and you can see the calculus. Rubio gets basically double what he showed in polls. That's who they really want. pushing him up to springboard. That's the real fraud. And then actually talking to insiders, they think Trump may have actually lost because he can't get the independent voters there because it's not an open party state in the caucus. So that's why he's so ahead in all the other ones. But the real fraud is Rubio and Hillary. That's what the intel shows. What do you think as an Iowan that's witnessed this for yourself?
Well, I talked to people that were going to the caucus for the food that were big fans of Star Trek and Star Wars, and they were going to vote for Rubio because of his ears. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah, there are a lot of young people that do really stupid stuff and really aggressive stuff, and a lot of Democrats that register for the first time, they tell them to do this in a lot of areas like this, to go vote, because you can register first as a Republican then switch back later and do that. And I'm not going to bash Rubio, okay, for his ears. I don't care what his ears look like. And one does look like Dumbo ear, the other one looks like a Spock ear. Whatever. I don't make fun of stuff like that, okay? The fact is, he's a flip-flopper, and the big money's backing him. That's all I need to know. I mean, I heard his speech about his family and his parents. Made me want to support him. But, man, the devil's got a silver tongue, folks.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
I played part of this in the last hour, but we went up to break, and the punchline, the kicker of John Cleese, one of the founders of Monty Python, obviously, didn't get broadcast. I'm going to play it now. The full video is up on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, where he says, I won't go to U.S. universities because I've been told by their colleagues that it doesn't matter what you say or do, they will be offended, they will get in your face, they will scream at you. This is turning into a 1984 society. But what Cleese has to understand is, and what Seinfeld has to understand, is this is by design. We've had the university department heads on, like Professor Hamamoto and others, who have been in the briefing meetings at the Rockefeller Foundation about the plan to do this. This is a takeover. And Bill and Melinda Gates are even more involved in primary and secondary education as well. It is a takeover of society. So I thought I'd play this clip since we were mentioning, and here it is.
All humor is critical. If you start saying, we mustn't criticize or offend them, then humor's gone. With humor goes a sense of proportion. And then, as far as I'm concerned, you're living in 1984.
And that's right. And if in 1984, which was based on what George Orwell, a British spy, very smart, thought would happen if the Soviet Union took over. He'd been for Stalin, fought in the Spanish Civil War, been highly decorated, shot in the neck by the Nazis. You know, he'd been a secret police officer before that in India. He'd lived for years homeless to see what it was like in Paris and London. Really an amazing guy. I've basically read all his books and essays. And I've read his essays. They're in different compendiums out there about the real world. Winston Smith is him at the Ministry of Truth. And then, of course, the Ministry of Love is where they torture you to death. And humor is banned. And so he's sitting there with his friend in the lunchroom and making jokes about stuff. And he goes, oh, he'll be disintegrated and, you know, killed for sure. And they explain, we're the priests of power. We want to trample and be trampled on. We're a society that measures progress by devolving, not developing. When you study the globalists, the Jacobins, the French Revolution, the proto-system of communism, you learn it's not something of the people. It's something created by the robber baron and royal class to bring in tyranny. Now, does that mean socialism can't deliver if you have a philosopher king like Muammar Gaddafi, which compared to these people is a philosopher king? He delivered like 95% of the money to the people in real projects, real jobs, real infrastructure. The globalists don't want that, but I'm ranting. We've only got Wayne Madsen for this segment. The next investigative journalist, works for Infowars.com, is a correspondent, also WayneMadsenReport.com. I wanted to get him on about Rubio because he's been on the trail of the supposed reports about Rubio and sexual behavior. Whether that's been fleshed out or not, we're going to see if that's a rumor or not. He's done the investigation years ago. We've had guests on that have brought up his excellent work, like Robert David Steele, so I thought, why not have him on? But separately, from my view, the unprecedented, over-the-top fraud in Iowa with six coin tosses in a row going to Hillary and to give the delegate from Bernie Sanders to her and double counting ballots that were hers and excluding others and more ballots showing up than were counted and Microsoft system breaking down right when they were going to check it. I mean, this thing stinks to high heaven. And Cruz running around, you know, having his surrogates announce that Ben Carson had quit and left, so vote for him. I mean, Talk about shenanigans. Here they are. We'll get his take on that first. Wayne, what's your view on Iowa, Trump, and where all this is going?
Well, the reason a week and a half ago I endorsed both Trump and Sanders was because I knew that the establishment of both parties and the big money up in Wall Street were dead set against Trump and Sanders. So they're going to manipulate. We've seen how they've done this before. Florida 2000, Ohio 2004. It's no longer one person, one vote in this country because of the way they can manipulate, and they're working with this corporate media, these talking heads who couldn't investigate a story if it bit them on the behind. I figured that for those people who supported Trump, though, they shouldn't fear, because in 2008, Mike Huckabee won Iowa, and in 2012, it was Rick Santorum. And I don't recall reading in the history books about President Huckabee or President Santorum. So Iowa's a weird state because of the caucus process. I don't think we would have had this turnout necessarily had it been a straight primary in both parties. I think we would have seen Sanders and Trump easily win.
I agree. All the evidence points at that. And there's a story at Infowars.com that Kurt Nimmo wrote that I think is excellent. Here's why Trump lost Iowa and why it doesn't matter. It's a closed party state, so he's mainly independents, libertarians, black crossover voters, blue-collar workers. I mean, Trump does have that appeal of Democrats as well, but he couldn't get any of them to vote for him. And so that's why his advisor, Stone, told him, look, don't even try to go to Iowa. Come in after Iowa. Trump, I guess, still thought he could win and almost did. I mean, who knows? There might have been hanky-panky there to stop him as well.
Well, there is. I understand there is same-day registration where you can actually show up at the caucus site and register to participate. But
that young Democrats crossed over to get Rubio in.
That's right. That's probably what happened. There are a lot of they do allow these crossovers, and unlike some states, you're not then pledged. Although they can't enforce that pledge, you're not pledged to vote for that candidate later anyway. So. We had these issues come up, remember, in 2004, where there was an accusation. Most of this came from the Hillary camp, ironically, that Barack Obama was busing students in from as far away as Chicago to vote for him in the Iowa caucus. We don't know whether that was actually the case or not. But speaking of Obama, that gets me to the point about Rubio. A lot of us were fooled by Obama in 2008. I know of only one journalist, and he was with the Chicago Trib, that was even investigating Obama's gay background in the city of Chicago. And because of the pressure exerted by David Axelrod, who used to work for the Chicago Trib, the story never ran in that newspaper. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
And let's be clear, we're not attacking the president if he's bisexual. The issue is...
Right.
Or just straight up you're gay. The issue is it's used for blackmail. It's used for control. The media covered it up, just like Hillary and all her girlfriends. Hey, if you're so liberal, bring this out. Go ahead and break that down.
Right. Well, okay. So here's the deal on Rubio is, and I find it ironic that after I ran the story, two stories on Rubio, that he was very well known as kind of an extroverted gay back in his days in high school. He was arrested after his first year in college. He flunked out at a small college in Missouri. He was arrested in a park in Miami called Alice Wainwright Park, along with a friend of his named Angel Barrios. They were in there after dark drinking beer. According the police reports have disappeared. They said that the charges were dropped. There's no mugshots.
These reports about him being tied to an infamous porn case? Because we have other.
Yeah, well, his buddy later on, Barrios, rents a home. He has a real estate investment company. He rents this home in a residential area of Miami to a guy out of Chicago. He was chased out of Chicago for running basically a gay dormitory where they had webcams all around the house where they would live stream. Black and Latino gay guys, in flagrante delicto. And the city of Miami went after this establishment Barrios and the guy from Chicago ran a company called FlavaWorks, sued the city of Chicago for trying to shut it down because it was in violation of zoning ordinances. And at the U.S. court in Miami, the judge found in favor.
So is that why the elite like Marco Rubio so much, is that he's also been connected to some other shady stuff?
Okay. His brother-in-law was busted in 1987 for being a major person in cocaine smuggling ring. And then after he got out of jail, Rubio was trying to get him all sorts of sweetheart deals and government contracts. So, yeah, this guy Rubio passes no smell test. I find it ironic that the judge that found in favor of Rubio's friend and the porn operation was appointed by George W. Bush. So yesterday, the log cabin Republicans accused me of mounting a last-minute right-wing attack, 11th-hour attack on Rubio, suggesting that I was somehow part of some political operation. You know, I'm waiting for my paycheck from whoever was responsible.
Well, expanding on that, you were writing about Rubio years ago.
Rubio, the thing is, this guy's been lying about an awful lot. First, he said his parents escaped Castro's Cuba. They emigrated to the United States in 1956, 4 years before Fidel Castro took over. In fact, they were working for Meyer Lansky's mob-owned casinos and hotels in Havana. His dad was a bartender there for one of these casinos. His mom was a hotel maid. Lansky's operation moved them to Miami, and then they went out to Las Vegas, where the dad worked in one of Lansky's bars in the casino, and the mom worked in one of the hotels.
Let's break this down. Who is Marco Rubio? Why does the system like him so much? Why do the Bushes love him so much? I mean, I think they may be trying to put him in there against Hillary.
Well, I think he's the new Barack Obama. He's a guy who's been less than honest about his background. The fact that he came from Cuba and was immersed in that CIA anti-Castro operation in South Florida is problematic. Just like with Obama's supposed biological father, Barack Sr., being brought over here in a CIA airlift operation to get him educated in college, ramped up, and sent back. We have another case. I think the CIA's got these minorities sitting there waiting to pick one when they need one.
Now it's really all right, Wayne Madsen, stay there. I want to come back and take a few calls for you and also look at any other issues that you think are front and center, what you're going to be writing about for InfoWars.com coming up in the next week. Wayne Madsen is our guest. WayneMadsenReport.com. I'm Alex Jones with InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And don't forget, the system does not want this information getting out, so spread the word.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
No matter how hard.
That's what's happened in this country, is the corruption is flagrant. Wayne Madsen is our guest. I'm Alex Jones. Nick in California listening on KOMY, 1340 AM. What's your take on Iowa and the whole course of this election? Any questions or comments for Wayne? Go ahead.
Well, maybe you bring up Alan Keyes. I was still flipping the coin because how many times did it flip? What kind of person flipped it? I could spin a wheel, flip a coin, or I could be, you know what I'm saying? It's off.
There's a lot of ways to rig flipping a coin. What do you think happened, Wayne? Hold on, we got to turn Wayne back up. Your audio wasn't up. Start over, Wayne. Go ahead.
Well, I think these were convenient tied votes to go to the coin toss. Look, I wouldn't trust Hillary or her husband in a game of poker, dice, or a coin flip. In all cases, I think the cards would be marked.
You mean don't trust known certified mass murdering con artist criminals?
Yeah, right. Well, Clinton was brought up, around Hot Springs, Arkansas, which had a heck of a lot of
gambling
casinos. So he knows all about how to rig a coin toss, I'm sure. But I think the odds of that all six coin tosses were it's like a 64-1 odds on that. But be that as it may, I think it was all stacked against Sanders. I think he probably won handily, but he didn't do bad. I mean, she can't claim an easy win. It was almost a tie. As for Cruz once again hit Trump on this New York values. I have another story up as of yesterday. Ted Cruz went to a last year accepted $2,700 from at a fundraiser at an apartment of two well-known gay Republicans, a guy named Ian Reisner and Maddie Wiederpass, Central Park South. Just 6 months earlier, a guy who Reisner had taken out of a gay bar in Hell's Kitchen was found dead in the guy's bathtub. So this is where Cruz decides to go have a fundraiser. You know, he's got a lot of nerve, him being married to a Goldman Sachs wife, talking about...
Let me ask you this. Is, and CFR, is Hillary going to get indicted?
Well, they're really doing a lot of three-card Monty here with the emails. If, in fact, those emails were sensitive, compartmented information and had information that gave away methods and sources. Sources would be agents. Methods would be how intelligence is acquired. I would say that she should be indicted for mishandling classified information. Isn't it funny? Hillary was one of the first ones to come out and say Edward Snowden should come back and face the music. It looks to me like she may have done much more harm than he did. He brought it to the light how the government was spying on us.
You're right.
It looks like she just willfully gave away some names or identities of some of our agents abroad.
And got caught lying about it many times. And then Petraeus didn't do one-tenth what she did. Let's go to Ryan in Texas. We're not defending Petraeus anyways, folks, just a fact. Ryan in Texas, you're on the air with Wayne Madsen.
Hey, I had a list of points that I wanted to make real quick, three about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, we're not screening your call. You're on air right now.
Okay, well, thing about Hillary Clinton that some people need to know, because she wants to make us so safe by, like, taking away our guns and stuff. She just sold our largest uranium deposit to Russia, and uranium is, like, saying, hey, you need water to make tea, just like you need uranium to make a nuke. I wanted to mention that. Another thing, her right-hand man, and this is all information. This isn't a conspiracy. This is just like saying, the Alex Jones Show is a show hosted by the GCN and Austin, Texas. It's a fact. It's like saying, okay, her right-hand man is the leading jihad directly linked to ISIS. Another thing, if women want to vote for Hillary, every woman needs to listen up because this is probably the most important thing I'm going to say. They want their women to wear rags on their heads, not be allowed to go out in public. They rape their women, tell them it's their own fault.
All right, listen, Ryan, here's the deal. I'm not mad at you, but you called in and said about Rupert Murdoch and Hillary Clinton and that connection. That's why I went to your call. I got to let you go because Wayne's got to go. I'll get to other calls so they can hold with our next guest. But, Wayne, what about the movement? I mean, clearly, that Rupert Murdoch is in bed with Hillary.
Yeah, I think, they're all in bed with each other. When Bill Clinton, of course, did uranium deals with the dictator president of Kazakhstan, enriching his Clinton Global Initiative quite handsomely, and his Clinton Foundation. So, they are the elite. I just wanted to add about Cruz. Where he got his money, this is a group that's connected to Fire Island, the Pines at Fire Island, one of the biggest gay porn production operations in the United States. So when Cruz talks about Trump's New York values, maybe you ought to look in a mirror.
Very well said. Thank you, Wayne Madsen. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Stay with us.
Got a business that you didn't build, that somebody else made that happen.
Well, the gentleman we
defend
have on
the Republic
next.
From enemies foreign and domestic, it's Alex Jones.
The gentleman we have on the next 30 minutes has got so much inside info, so much intel, has broken so many stories, filed so many successful lawsuits. It's amazing. His integrity is just over the top. That's why they call him a kook, a conspiracy theorist, discredited on CNN, you name it, MSNBC, because there's nothing that's discredited him. It's because he's so dead on target. It's like when they said Ted Cruz is discredited because he said Obamacare increases prices. No, he's been proven right. And, of course, it's Larry Klayman, a former founder of Judicial Watch. Now he's founded many other organizations. He's the guy that had the success for several years in court blocking the NSA until another court overturned it. But now he's back in court, and he has introduced a lawsuit that's gotten international attention in the last 2 weeks trying to block Obama's gun orders, and it's now been hit with the first lawsuit. And, of course, Obama says his actions are consistent with the Second Amendment. He's doing it on so many fronts, whether it's open borders, shutting off our power plants. Larry Klayman is battling that, and we're going to be talking to him right now. But before we get into his action on that front, before we break all that down, I really want to get his view on the Republican race, who he thinks has the most integrity, because we have guests on who I respect as well, but they'll say some pretty wild stuff about folks, and a lot of times it turns out to be true. I mean, we have guests on that all have integrity, but sometimes we don't get everything exactly right. We're trying to find the truth. That's the difference between us and the dinosaur mainstream media. FreedomWatchUSA.org is his main organization and website. He's a frequent commentator in television and radio, as well as weekly columnist at WorldNet Daily. I'm not going to go over all his degrees and what he's done and successfully impeaching Obama. Excuse me, I had a Freudian slip. Clinton. But he's one of the most hated men by the establishment. They have, you know, made characters about him on the West Wing. The list goes on and on. So he joins us to go over basically the field right now and what's unfolding in this country. Larry, who do you like for president? What do you think of what happened in Iowa? And then going into the election, what tricks you think Obama's going to pull in his last 10 to 11 months in office? Let's fade Larry up. We've been having some audio issues. Yes, sir, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I was calling about the...
That's a caller. We're talking to Larry Klayman right now. Larry, do we have you? No, we're having some audio cross issues here today. We're going to figure that out and get him back on here in just a moment. Before I go any further today, live radio, folks, stuff like this happens. It's kind of the fun part of it. We are offering a really great special on colloidal silver, which is known for its antiviral and antibiotic effects, both internally and externally. I personally have had amazing results with it. When I have a sore throat or whatever that even antibiotics haven't been successful with. Everybody, even mainline stores now sell colloidal silver and silver creams in hospitals, are relying on it to a great extent. We have 24-hour flash sale. Get Silver Bullet for 15% off and 10% off with auto ship. So 15% off already the low, low price on this high-quality colloidal silver at InfoWarsLife.com. Okay? And then if you sign up for auto ship, which you can cancel anytime, get a 10% off everything you order as well. So we're now launching auto ship at InfoWarsStore.com, InfoWarsLife.com. We're very, very excited about that, and your purchases make everything we do here possible. Now, three's the charm. Going to Larry Klayman of FreedomWatchUSA.org, one of the greatest mavericks out there of fighting globalist tyranny, Islamic tyranny, all of it. The left openly allied with Islamic tyranny. I want to get into that with him. I want to get into his lawsuits to block Obama's executive power grab. I want to ask him about the election and so much more. Larry, thanks for coming on with us.
You're welcome, Alex. Great to hear from you.
So much to talk about. What do you want to tackle first?
I think the thing I want to tackle first is that our president gave him the award Muslim of the Year. I don't know if you saw that. It was a parody in Time magazine. He's visiting a mosque in Baltimore tomorrow, which is part of the Islamic Society of North America, which has ties to terrorism. And the Islamic Society of North America was an unindicted co-conspirator in a criminal case in Dallas, Texas, a number of years. And some of its members have actually been indicted, convicted, and imprisoned. And here our president, with his Muslim outreach, is going to a mosque that has these ties. And I might add, you might remember, Alex, I had brought a lawsuit against the Ground Zero Mosque several years ago, which is now mostly a dead letter, at least the mosque is, figuratively speaking. And that mosque also was a member of the Islamic Society of North America. So this is an outrage. And the fact that the president would put more time into doing that than fighting ISIS and fighting terrorists tells you that he is indeed Muslim of the Year. And you can see that parody on our website at freedomwatchusa.org. if it, it's parody, but it's very sad, and it's very frightening.
Well, I used to hear you 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when he was running for office, say he's you're probably a radical closet jihadist, all the rest of it. But now there's no doubt, speaking from the Quran better than an imam in Cairo when he first got into office, saying this isn't Islam, ISIS being caught funding him, Donald Trump coming out and exposing it, many others, his family connected into the Muslim Brotherhood, backing the violent overthrow of so many countries that are our allies or not against us. From your inside sources and your deep research, sir, you've been proven right. What is the larger game plan? Who is Barack Obama?
Well, in my view, Barack Obama is someone who has very close ties to Louis Farrakhan and other black Muslim leaders, and he is an anti-Semite. He's anti-Christian. He believes in furthering the cause of his people, and his people happen to be in large part Muslim. And that explains why our rules of engagement, Ted Cruz made reference to that last night in his speech after he won the primary in Iowa. That's why our troops can't fire upon Muslims unless they fire upon them first. We represent the families of Extortion 17, the biggest loss of life in the Afghan War. 30 special ops went down. They couldn't defend themselves. It was right after bin Laden was killed. Some of them were SEAL Team 6, we think. And this is the kind of thing that's been going on now for 7 years. And if you're Christian or you're Jewish, you're not as important to this president as his own people. And, of course, he was born half Muslim. Under Sharia law, he is Muslim. I'm not indicting someone because they're Muslim. I'm indicting him because he's taken actions against the interests of the United States, against Israel. And this has done us serious damage. And it's,
well, we're going to get into the executive orders that you're battling here in a moment. But first, obviously, you know all about it. The listeners do, too. But every day it gets crazier. Minors as young as 11 years old, married when asking asylum in Norway. The police just basically say, you know, let them have sex with 11 and 10-year-old girls because it's their culture. A new video today, migrants attack elderly Germans trying to protect women from harassment on Munich train. The stabbings, the killings, the mass rapes. Another mayor comes out and says children being sexually harassed by migrants, don't provoke them. It's the children's fault now. What is happening with the left, not just here, but in Europe? I've even found out that it's a new fad, Mr. Klayman, where liberal women want to go out and find a very Sharia law Muslim man to slap him around and dominate him, but they hate their daddy from the liberal West who gave them all that freedom. And is this like some type of mass suicide culturally by the left? Who are these people?
Alex, let me preface this by saying I'm an international lawyer. I started as that. I became a crime fighter, so to speak, with Judicial Watch and now Freedom Watch. I'm not anti-foreign, okay? But the reality here is that the Muslim culture, and there are good Muslims, okay, but the majority of them are frankly not compatible with our culture. I'll say it straight up. They're not. And for Westerners to think that they can ever think like we do, or they're going to react like us to the same phenomenon, things that happen, are totally false. And in the Muslim world, there's a lack of respect for women. That explains what's happened in Germany with all the molestations and rapes of the refugees that have come in. I've experienced it myself with people that I've been with over time in the Middle East. And that's the reality. They do not think like us. They do not worship the same God. It's not radical Islam. It's Islam.
So why is the left bringing them in mass?
Because it's chic. Well, you know, they live in a dream world. And for that matter, you know, most conservatives live in a dream world, too. I haven't heard, except for Donald Trump, I haven't heard one of the candidates call it like it is. It's always radical Islam. It's not Islam. It's not radical Islam. It's Islam. This religion is not a religion at all. It is not compatible with Judeo-Christian values.
Sure. Well, I mean, they're certainly taking Muslims from the most radical areas and bringing them here where they can't even get along with each other. I mean, is this form of Islam compatible anywhere, Larry?
Well, among themselves, perhaps it's compatible. They can all kill each other, which is apparently what they're doing over there between Shiite and Sunni. I mean, they can't even get along with themselves. So the thing here, Alex, you know, I am a strong supporter of being, if you're a citizen, you deserve all the rights. When George W. Bush didn't allow Americans who were Muslims to have right of counsel, if they were arrested, I was against that. But there is no right to come to this country and to get visas and to emigrate here during a time of war. We're in a time of war. Trump was absolutely right.
And then have everybody bend over backwards. So what do we do? And again, you're valiantly and successfully blocking the NSA. Now you're going after Obama, which we know is dangerous. They've indicted the Texas Attorney General for doing similar things to what you've been doing. So tell us the inside baseball on the executive power grab, sir.
Well, before I do that, if I can get into a little segue here.
Sure.
The NSA, you know, we enjoined the National Security Agency twice. That means the court ordered them to stop surveying all American citizens twice. That matter is now up on appeal, and the government's appealing it. And we changed the law. It became the USA Freedom Act, and now the telephone messages have to stay in the hands of Verizon, Sprint, and other companies until they get a warrant. I doubt that the NSA is obeying the law. They never have. But we learned recently, and this tells you something, about the so-called Washington establishment or cartel, whatever you want to call it, Democrat and Republican, National and American League, is that we learned that the NSA was spying on members of Congress during the time period that they were considering whether to reject or ratify the Iran Treaty. And the NSA did that. They were spying on Israel and members of Congress. You know what? And no one has complained about that. Even Rubio, who claims to be this great protector of the American people with when it comes to terrorism and national security. He was on the Intelligence Committee. He has nothing to say about it because the Republicans and Democrats knew about it. For the NSA to be intercepting the telephone and internet communications of Congress is perhaps the biggest scandal in American history.
It destroys the separation of powers.
And I believe Obama used this to blackmail them into approving the Iran Treaty. And we have a whistleblower by the name of Dennis Montgomery who has come forward to the FBI with immunity, who will tell you that that's exactly what the CIA and NSA have been doing.
Shifting gears out of that, your groundbreaking work, keep saying that, folks, to you know, really let you know how important this is, what we're talking about. What about an indictment of Hillary or the FBI saying that they're going to go public if they don't indict her at the Justice Department? We've heard that from a lot of prominent people. From what you know, sir, is that accurate?
Alex, they'll never indict Hillary under either a Democrat or a Republican administration. They protect each other. You know, when I was fighting the Clintons during the Judicial Watch years when I was chairman and general counsel, I'm the founder, of course, I went to John Ashcroft, the attorney general under W, and I said, why don't we settle these cases? And he wouldn't do it. They continued on because there's an unwritten pact between the two of them that neither of them pushed too hard. Hillary will never be indicted. However, I do believe that FBI Director Comey is an honest man, and I've been working with him, with Dennis Montgomery, and I do believe that they will leak it, and I do believe that Hillary ultimately will have to withdraw as a presidential candidate. I think that's probably going to happen.
So a Tom DeLay and others have been saying that they're going to release the info. You've been talking to them. Little birdies are saying that Hillary should get ready for that.
I think she has to get ready. I think the Democrats will show her the door. And, you know, if you're in favor of a Republican candidate, that's probably good news. But you know what, Alex? You and I have had enough experience. Democrat or Republican, the American people need to stand up for themselves. And in the years after George W. Bush's election in 2000, you know, he did a lot of stuff that just wasn't really very good. And we stood up to him at Judicial Watch, and I stood up to him at Freedom Watch.
You sued him over and over and sued them and even had a lot of the right wing come after you. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was George W. Bush who started this NSA thing, getting everybody's telephonic metadata. So it's the be all and end all is not a Republican presidential candidate. We, the American people, are going to have to stand up for our own rights. And I've been grappling over the years, to be honest, on how we do that short of violent revolution. I don't want to see that.
Well, sure, let's take our states back. Let's do what the governor's doing here in Texas. Let's expose what's happening. What else can we do? Obviously promote what FreedomWatchUSA.org does?
Well, yes, we do need the help. We need the support. We're the mouse that roared. Our website is FreedomWatchUSA.org, FreedomWatchUSA.org, and we welcome contributions. We need more staff. We need to do more of what we've been doing.
Sure, let's get into the executive power grabs now, because that's what you're spearheading. You're suing them over this. You've done it before successfully. Am I right in saying this is the most brazen executive power grab we've ever seen?
Absolutely. And we have a new case with regard to these gun control regulations, so-called gun control. It's down there in Florida. I have a status conference on Friday with the judge. It's another example of Obama believing that he's king, that he can get away with it. And that's why everybody's mad. Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, others, because the Republicans have rolled over for 7 years to Obama. He's won every victory. He's much smarter than they are. He's gotten everything he wants. and the American people have been given short shrift and our country's in ruins.
So is what Obama wanted to do going according to plan? Do you think he's planning something else?
I believe he would like to stay in power. You know, at the end of the Clinton years, everybody thought he was going to declare a state of national emergency under FEMA and take control. With Obama, I don't think it's likely, but it could happen. He does believe that he is above the law, that he's king. I hope that does not happen, but the country's in such a bad shape right now that he could try almost anything.
Well, I was about to say, we know the preparations went on under Clinton. That came out in Congress. The military told us about it. They were testing the waters. Under Obama, the expansion to prepare basically a civil war against the Patriots has been unprecedented. But I think the establishment realizes that's not going to go over too well, in my view, Larry.
No, I don't think so, Alex. But, you know, you and I, Obama has a, quote, subversive list, people that he considers to be adverse to him. I'm sure you and I are charter members of that and others in this.
Oh, it's come out in the news, Wheeler.
That's the reason why, you know, the NSA and CIA surveillance is to keep people down, because they can destroy anybody they want. Supreme Court justices, other justices of the Supreme Court, representatives, senators, prominent businessmen. Dennis Montgomery's come forward with information about that. They've been surveying everybody. So even if they don't destroy you, most people are afraid, and they won't stick their neck out, and they won't take a stand in this country. And the reality is that people
right.
have been beaten back into submission. You know, the line I use, I probably used it on your show before, but if King George III had an NSA, the Founding Fathers never would have made it to Philadelphia to sign the Declaration of Independence. They would have been picked up, arrested, and executed before they got there.
That's right.
That's where we are today. We can't wage revolution even if we want to. And that's the quandary that we're in. So I spend a lot of time every day just thinking, what can we do legally to try to change things? And frankly, other than my lawsuits, and we hope that we get good judges like we got in the NSA case with Judge Richard Leon or Royce Lambreth that I got during the Clinton years. But there aren't that many of them, Alex. And there's going to come a point in time when the American people are going to have a choice.
Sure.
And they have to go to the barricades.
Larry, let me ask you a question here in general, because you've been around so long, you know so many people, you're wise. What percentage, dead reckoning, of people in the federal government itself are just yes men and women versus good guys versus people that are consciously bad, that, you know, that believe in this collectivist view or fascist view, whatever you call it, totalitarianism? Because clearly we're going in a totalitarian direction, but then I run into so many people in government at every level that are totally freaked out about what's happening now. This isn't 20 years ago when you were first exposing things, you know, with Matt Drudge or whatever. Now we have more credibility than ever. I mean, folks know that there's a lot of rotten stuff going on in Denmark.
That's right. You know, when I was back a young lawyer at the Justice Department, I would say that maybe 30% of the people there actually did work. The rest of them walked around with coffee, talking all day long. And I'm talking about the lawyers. And I transferred to the AT&T trial section. We broke up AT&T because my other section, I thought, really wasn't doing much of anything other than kibitzing all day long. But today, I would say that probably most government workers are yes men. They don't want to stick their neck out. They want the security of a government job. And then there are the people at the top. They're the ones who are, in large part, corrupt. And they do what is best for the president that puts them in power and to advance their own goals. And between Democrats and Republicans, it's called dividing up the pot in Washington, D.C. There's a huge amount of money there. There's never been a recession. They're doing better than ever. So this is the problem that we face. But then you get somebody at a presidential level, like Obama, who is frankly just evil. He is evil. And he frankly has a disdain for people that are not like him. And he sets the tone going all the way down the line. The fish rots from the head. And believe me, it's rotting. And it's almost to the point of no return.
Well, remember when he was a candidate, Obama, and he got caught on audio in San Francisco saying, I'm going to get these better clingers. It's like they want to mount our head on the wall when they've already taken the country over. I don't get why they want to shut our power plants off and want to bankrupt us. But I guess it's Cloward and Piven. They want to make us dependent. They want to rub our noses in it. And they're just such bad people. That said, what do you think of Iowa? A lot of hanky-panky obviously going on. I mean, obviously, separately with Freedom Watch, USA.org, you're nonpartisan. But as a citizen, who are you liking for president, Larry Klayman?
Yeah, it's Larry Klayman. I'm not endorsing anybody, Alex, but let's give me a I'll give you an understanding of my view on things. I don't like Rubio. I think he's two-faced. I think he's phony. I think he's the version of Barack Obama. But he's very articulate, and I think he has an excellent chance of winning this election. And he's obviously better than Obama. Cruz, I believe, is too harsh. I like a lot of what Ted Cruz says. I regrettably don't think he's eligible to be president. I don't understand why he kept dual citizenship until 2014. That was just dumb. And I don't think he's going to make it. Trump, I believe, has a shot. And many of the things that he says, I really like. I think it's going to come down to Cruz and Rubio. And it's really a toss-up at this point in time.
I agree with you. And when I see the Bilderberg Group, I see the Davos Group, I see George Soros coming out saying, do whatever you have to do, stop Trump. Is it because they just don't know who he is, but know he isn't beholden to them? Or is it because they know he really does want to save the country? Because, you know, the Trump folks reach out to us to have him on. And then I've talked to folks that know Trump well, and they say, no, he's aware of what's happening in America now, and he's really freaked out. And that's even the Politico article. They met with 20 top Republicans from New York who met with him 2 years ago. And he said, forget running for New York. If I'm going to do this, I want to try to save the country from these crazy politicians, you know, that do one-sided trade deals. I mean, just the fact that he doesn't want to enslave the country and doesn't want to rule us, but wants to be the big turnaround guy that's the hero. He wants to be George Washington, you know, not Mao Zedong. And so that's just what I see. And I see the whole system against him. I see the money piled up against him, just like it's piled up against you. And that's who I root for.
No, I agree with you. And see, Trump doesn't owe anybody anything. And he's honest. You know, he says, look, when I was a businessman, I bribed everybody I could. And I got what I wanted. Now I don't have to bribe anybody. I'm worth billions. Okay, at least he's honest. Or when Cruz was coming up the line, they asked him, why are you attacking Cruz? And he says, well, because he wasn't doing well before. You know, at least he says things to the American people. He connects from a human standpoint.
Sure, and he said, this system is legalized bribery. I use it, but not to eat, just to get them to leave me alone. Trump had to give them hundreds of millions of dollars over the decades just to keep them off his back.
Right, you know, and it's time Americans started saying the truth. And that's the difference between Trump and Cruz, is that Cruz can't connect with a person one-on-one. He can connect with Iowa, okay? But he can't connect hardly anywhere else. Trump can. And from a human standpoint, even though sometimes, you know, he uses language which we don't approve of, people see that he actually cares about them and is able to get down at their level and talk to them. And he's a strong person. And what he did with Fox News the other day, although it may have cost him this election, he did it on principle. And you have to take a stand. And he was telling the American people, look, I will take a stand, even if it hurts me sometimes, because you have to use power politics to get what you want. And that's what they need.
That's right. Well, that's in this How Trump Did It, a Politico article that's actually pretty fair overall. The media spun it like he was calculated. It proves it. No, he knew they'd take his TV deals away. They knew he'd lose hundreds of millions. They knew he's all in now. And, you know, you can only admire somebody who's actually in the arena with a bunch of other people wringing their hands.
Alex, after Roger Ailes sent that email out, and Roger shouldn't have sent it. I commend Roger for building, you know, a big network, and he's the only thing out there. I wish he went further sometimes and really talking about who Obama was. They're not allowed to talk about the Muslim side of things on Fox. But the reality is that Trump stood up to him, and I admire that. And that wasn't right, that email that was sent out that, you know, compared him to the meeting with Putin and Ayatollahs and things like that. And Trump will, I believe, ultimately win this election if, you know, his health holds up and, God forbid, he stays safe. I'm worried about that.
I agree. I think they might kill him.
Yeah, you know, it's scary. But we need somebody like that who, even if he's not perfect, he's talking straight up to the American people. And we need to say it like it is. And, you know, particularly what I like is we need to have a moratorium on Muslim immigration. I think that is the most important.
Well, even Louis Farrakhan, who we interviewed, said Trump was right on that front because it's going to come in and destabilize things. Then his group will get blamed. Larry Klayman, amazing having you on with us. FreedomWatchUSA.org. We'll talk to you again very, very soon, sir.
Thanks, Alex. God bless.
Have a great week coming up. Wow. I mean, just that guy has done so much. And he called it on Obama and the rest of it, and I didn't think he was right about that. I've argued with him, you know, 8 years ago about it. We're going to come back, go right to your phone calls. Mike, Mark, Buckley, Larry, and others. I'm Alex Jones.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
thanks for holding, my friends. We're going to go back to your calls now, and I won't have to hurry through them as much because our guests are gone. David Knight is coming in about an hour. I may actually have him come in a little bit earlier because wild horses couldn't drag me away from coming in after the Iowa caucuses and covering things. But I told the story at the start of the show. When Trump lost, I knew he was going to lose because the fact that it's on an open caucus and he's got a lot of libertarians and crossover folks that would vote for him. And plus, there's a lot of hanky-panky going on, but he's like 10, 20, 30 points ahead in other caucuses, other primary states right now. But I got so bummed out, feeling bad. You know, when you first get sick, you don't realize you're sick. You just go, man, I feel terrible. Then it hits you, you're sick. So for about an hour after I covered the caucuses with the crew last night, I was like, man, I'm bummed out. And then I realized I had a little bit of a fever last night, and I don't get sick but about once a year. Boy, I thought I braved it with my kids getting it and everybody else. This year, and they're obviously a lot healthier as well, but than a lot of people I know. But it did hit me, and I think I'm going to, if David can do it, I just decided to do this during the break, have him come in here at the bottom of the hour, because all work and no play makes me dull, but this isn't play. I need to go lay down on the couch for a little while so that I can then finish a bunch of imperative work that is coming up today. I got a bunch of work around the office. In TV syndication, radio syndication, ads we're cutting, investigative reports I've got to approve. And so I've just got to be able to be set up and be ready for that. We've got a clip I want to play, and we're going to come back and go right to your calls, so I don't want to cut you short right now, that I mentioned earlier. TV viewers can go see it. And that's Ted Cruz in Iowa with one of his daughters being a little pissy and not wanting to hug him. And people are saying this shows that Ted Cruz, we show it right here, for there must be this evil, dark guy. Look, I have two daughters. I have a son. They usually run up, hug me, love me, they love daddy. But sometimes, especially in crowds of people or stuff going on or they got something on their mind, they don't want to hug me. And it doesn't happen very often, but it's times like this. And it's usually when they're focused on something else. And you look at his daughter. We'll go ahead and roll the video and audio. She's looking ahead. There's something she wants to do, probably an ice cream stand or something, or pizza stand 20 feet away. I don't know. I just know this look.
Yeah, they're going with me.
Hey, let's
hop out of my seat.
She's just being
a... Ow!
For me, that shows he spoiled the daylights out of him. Like I've done. He's probably a pretty good dad.
Are you taking off?
Here's the deal. I'm not... I had a lot of problems with Cruz, and I think they probably did do some dirty tricks against Carson, saying he'd quit and stuff to try to get ahead. I don't like that. I'm going to watch Cruz very, very closely. And look, we had investigative journalist on Wayne Madsen. I didn't know he was going to go there with this whole thing and Cruz and... his connections to Rubio and the gay porn and the rest of it. And I don't know if he's involved in that. There's no evidence of it. But Wayne has got his snout on this and is somebody I respect, so we're going to continue to look into it. But that said, the reason those type of things are important is because they can blackmail you with that information. And we know with the Clintons, we know with Obama, we know with Hillary, that there's a bunch of hanky-panky going on. And you see Hillary out there with all her girlfriends on the road, and she can't keep her hands off young women when she's on stages. My issue is that it's creepy. You know, this weird, power-mad witch. And then, it's like Hugh Hefner with young women kind of is creepy, Well, then to see her, it's creepy. It's not that I'm against a woman or I'm against, I'm a libertarian. I'm a Christian. I think those lifestyles become destructive. You end up not having children. They get put in their own groups who then see us as the enemy who are heterosexual and, have traditional lifestyles. I'm a classical liberal. But it's like Drudge said, why aren't we seeing Hillary's lovers? You know that if a Republican had a whole big string of boyfriends confirmed, guys stay in the same hotel room with them over and over again, and that you'd hear about it. And you should, because, if Obama frequents Chicago bathhouses, we have a right to know. And the truth is, we investigated it. Wayne Madsen went there and did, and boy, is there fire where there was smoke. And so I have such a problem. I'm a Christian, but I have a problem with some folks that set sexual stuff up as the number one issue instead of political corruption, because then they can burn politicians for individual sexual actions, but not for the bigger crimes that everybody's involved in. It's like going after Clinton for the sexual improprieties and lying about that. How about giving missile secrets to the Chi-Coms? We'll be back.
You walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
I wonder what Mr. Serling, Special Forces Commando, World War II, in the German front.
This is Mr. Romney Wordsworth.
Think about America today.
His last 48 hours on Earth. He's a citizen of the state, but will soon have to be eliminated. Because he's built out of flesh, and because he has a mind. Mr. Romney Wordsworth, who will draw his last breaths in the Twilight Zone.
You have found it. The desperate attempt to alert humanity to a scientific takeover. I'm your host, Alex Jones. Thank you for joining us. All right, we're going to your phone calls right now. David Knight's coming at the bottom of the hour. Kit Daniels got several interviews last weekend with Ron Paul. He just posted another one of them up where he basically exposes Bernie Sanders. And when David Knight comes in at the bottom of the hour, he's going to be playing that, breaking down the fraud, the evidence of manipulation in Iowa, taking your phone calls, and then they're landing in the next 45 minutes. They just got into Dallas about an hour ago. Richard Reeves and Krug did a great job covering Iowa the last week and a half. They're going to be in studio the last 30 minutes of the fourth hour today. Right now, let's go ahead and go to your phone calls. Let's talk to Mike in Louisiana. Thank you. You're on the air.
Hey, Alex.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to highlight an issue with a kind of a two-part question.
Sure, go ahead.
Isn't it a fundamental flaw that the president appoints the Supreme Court justices, and doesn't it make them effectively yes-men and attach strings between the judicial and executive branches?
Well, that's to create a separation of powers again, because Congress has to approve them. And so it puts a check and a balance on that as well, and the court is supposedly checked by the Congress yet again with appropriations funding. But, yes, it's very incestuous. It's not a perfect system. It's one of the best ever developed. But it's been circumvented by the media, the Fifth Estate, and the bureaucracy, the Fourth Estate. And so they now are running away with the Constitution. They've bought off the presidency and Congress and the courts and are transferring U.S. sovereignty and lawmaking authority to unelected secret global boards via a la TPP.
Well, I just wanted to ask that question because I kind of feel like that's why the president is so arrogant and why the Obamacare issue got overturned.
That's it. No, they're blackmailing him. We have people testifying to the FBI that you heard Klayman. Klayman talks to the FBI director himself, and I'm not lionizing them. It's just that they are trying to get Hillary indicted. I mean, they have to. Listen, the whole, even though the FBI isn't perfect, which by any means it's not, very dangerous organization, a lot of serious bad stuff they do in their history, obviously. Different compartments, some good, some bad. They know the whole system's lost basically complete credibility. I mean, if they went after Richard Nixon, they got to go after Hillary and Obama. I mean, we went after Bush. You heard Klayman earlier. I mean, Bush was terrible. Nothing compared to Obama. It's so crazy. That then it's the climate. Mitch McConnell last week, and they're still trying to do it, tries to give him global martial law military power, including domestically. That's senators using those words. Before I did. I was like, oh, did he copy my exact words? No, I read the bill. I read the subsections. And it turned out a senator, a day before I learned of it, Democrat from Connecticut, had said the exact words I said. We didn't learn of the clip till Sunday. He made the comments on Thursday, week before last. I mean, that right there, that's not even news, is just, at a certain point, man, Calgon, take me away, Scotty, beam me up. There's no intelligent life down here to rip off James Traficant, the classical congressman who had weirder hair than Donald Trump and died in a farming action, if you believe that. But anything else you'd like to add, Mike?
Well, I was just worried that he might try to use that to be able to push the whole gun thing just like he did with Obamacare.
No, absolutely. They're coming for everything, bro. It's on. They told Drudge, we're coming for your free speech. I've been threatened. But at the same time, I've never had so many people in government and corporations saying we're on your side and giving us information and everything. And then and this is genuine. I mean, folks are freaked out, and they should be, because it's all coming down to the end of the line right now. Let's go ahead now and go back to another caller. Let's talk to Mike in Arizona. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, Alex. Hope you feel better.
Hey, I'm having a smoother show today because I feel like I got kicked in the head by a mule.
Well, that was actually one of my topics I wanted to talk to you about, because you came on Friday after the debate and kind of apologized for, you know, being yourself the night before. I just want to tell you that that's what we love about you. We love to have you come on, let loose a little bit. You know, like the Facebook mentions after the X-Files, you know, don't take your own advice on what you gave to Rand Paul. Don't listen to your handlers so much. And
well, I'm not, I mean, it's not really handlers, you know, it's like my mom hears it or my cousin does. And then I said, how was that? And they said, a little bit of a, it was entertaining, sure, but things are so serious now. I get it. There should be some humor, but I shouldn't be, you know, out of control, running around the office, you know, just jumping in front of, I mean, you know, because at a certain point, I hate the mainstream media. They traumatize me. I hate looking at them. Brett Baer and just in CNN with the CIA guy, Anderson Cooper. I can't hardly look at Hillary. I see images of George Soros and get upset. Obama, Clinton. I can't look at them anymore, man. I've been fighting these people for 20-something years. And so I do. My point is a lot of new people are tuning in every minute, and then they see me acting wild. I know it's fun. It's real. That's why folks like it. It's just I was saying, a lot of stations, TV and radio, are picking up these special events we do. None of them complained. In fact, they called me up and said, hey, it's okay, yeah, but we do like it more when you do actually play the debate with commentary. You know, I think it was advertised as serious analysis, and then I did a comedy deal. I think we should maybe do some comedy programming and then announce that's comedy. If stations want it, they can get it. But, you know, when the comedy descends into me, you know, just making jokes and, you know, calling Biggs a wet cat. He was laughing at it. It was funny. He was over there, you know, pouting. And then he's a real person. And then I was running around acting goofy. It's fun. And people said, oh, don't go on there and apologize. I wasn't even so much apologizing. I was being retrospective. But I hear you, brother, and we love you, too. What else is on your mind?
Just number two, I'm just super happy to see you back in Trump. Like yourself, I was a tall guy before. I had donated to his campaign. But he's not running a campaign that can win. And I'm just glad to see you behind Trump. And now, especially with what's going on, I just hope you guys stay there. And hopefully we get what we need out of this campaign.
Yeah, we're going
to
back Trump unless he does some really tyrannical statements or whatever, because we know the system's against him. And then if he does get in, I've never really endorsed a presidential candidate like this. And so if he does get in, it will be all of our moral responsibilities to keep him on the straight and narrow. And if he starts messing with us, to go completely ape. And by the way, he knows that. I mean, you can't, like, do this whole messianic populist leader thing and try to be George Washington 2.0. If you don't deliver, Donald Trump is going to be the new word, basically, for latrine. So he's either going to be the George Washington type or he's going to be Benedict Arnold. And from what I've seen so far, he's going in the right direction. Now that means, though, when somebody's fully committed and I'm fully committed, I'm going to give him some benefit of the doubt. And I'm going to have debates about it here on air. But if he starts turning or really pulling some stuff, we got to go out against him. And that's just the responsibility. And then we have the responsibility to really bring him down. Do you agree with that statement?
Absolutely. And when they're reaching out to you guys like they did when you're outside the restaurant and you were talking about that they reached out to you, that says a lot. It says that he's a listener and he is awake. And, you know, like you always say, he's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But him being a listener and reaching out to you guys, to me, it speaks volumes.
Well, aware of the show, seen some of it, knows what's going on in the New World Order. His top advisor, Stone, who they have be a shadow advisor now for political reasons, obviously, is a total, you know, been all over Latin America, all over Europe, worked for 9 administrations, inside 3 of them, you know, above spy level, you know, a true operative. And he knows about the whole New World Order and the whole 9 yards as well. So it's just, this stuff's real, folks. It's happening. And Donald Trump's an informed guy. And what I've been told, not just by Stone, but by others, is it's surreal when one person or two or three or four tell you, but Trump has had like a crash course in brain surgery. And now he, you know, the word is, Alex, you are the underground stealth, hit the barbed wire, you know, pit bull surrogate, basically. That's what we're doing here. And then, you know, and I get the attacks, I take the, you know, all of it. And then people like Trump can try to get in and stop it from that level. But the globalists have his phones tapped. They're watching him. That's why they're hitting red alert. I mean, on board the globalist command ships, just imagine. I mean, they are in panic mode right now because, look, that's why they hate Rand Paul. They know full well he's been a listener forever. They know full well he didn't fall too far from daddy's tree. And they told him, if you're like your dad, we're going to battle you. So he kind of publicly acted like he wasn't. They're not stupid. I've had politicals tell me, we're not dumb. We know he's worse than you. Probably true when it, to them. Rand Paul's probably just as bad as I am to the New World Order. Okay? And so that's why they hate his guts. I appreciate your call. Anything else? I guess he's gone. We're going to come back and go to Mark in Canada. And then we're going to go to Buckley. In fact, let's just go ahead and go to Mark in Canada right now. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Alex. How you doing?
Good, brother.
Well, I'm pretty disappointed watching the Iowa bullshit last night.
All right, we got to let you go. We got to delay that out. And people like to cuss. I get it. But we're on a bunch of FCC channels. And then we have to delay you. And then we have to let you go under FCC rules. Because then you can just keep doing it. And I'm not going to get our stations fined. And none of us are perfect. But let's really, it's a family show. And just come on, folks. We're not just internet, okay? We're on TV stations, radio stations, UHF, VHF. We're getting a lot of new affiliates. We're reaching a lot of new people. We've gone from 20 million people a week to about 28 million in the last year. And we just have to, like I said, I can't run around, you know, at night acting silly, you know, during a show because I'm making fun of Megyn Kelly. And then one joke becomes 10 jokes, becomes 20 jokes. Got to be more professional. And that's just me dialing it back because, I mean, let's just get honest. I am a swing from the chandeliers maniac, at least previously in my life to some extent. And so I get it. We'll be back and take more of your calls. Buckley and others, stay with us. Come from the land of the ice and snow. Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. David Knight's coming in to take over. I'll be back if we're willing tomorrow. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Then there's the fourth hour host. The Hammer of the Gods. All right, folks. I want to go to a few more of your phone calls. Dave will continue with the calls. We have a clip of that our crew shot, Kit Daniels, up on Infowars.com with Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders and more. Briefly, the system doesn't want you informed. No one debates that. The system doesn't want you involved. No one debates that. The system wants you out of the game. So just getting in the game, becoming aware of how things work, by osmosis, that will start to stop the system. The system is predatory. And a big thing with all these invasive bacteria, drug resistant, you name it, it's good to have something that's another bullet in your cartridge. And of course, we're talking about silver bullet, high quality, 30 parts per million, the highest quality we can produce from the top lab in the country, available at InfoWarsStore.com or InfoWarsLife.com. We're doing 24-hour sales all this week. And today, right through to tomorrow when the show starts, you can get it 15% off. Now, separately, if you want to sign up for AutoShip, if you're routinely ordering stuff, pick whatever items you want. You can cancel anytime. You get 10% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Free shipping on orders of more than $50 as well. A lot of specials. We got a high-tech, modern, bulletproof, pun intended, shopping cart. Check it out, InfoWarsLife.com or 888-253-3139. And again, your purchase funds this whole operation. And our reporters this week from Iowa to Washington covering what's happening. Boots on the ground, a real media organization turning heads worldwide. Crashing through paradigms worldwide. Expanding horizons worldwide. Buckley in Missouri. Don't hear a lot of Buckleys. Whenever it was a reporter here, well, it doesn't matter. Go ahead, Buckley, you're on the air.
Hey, Alex. Glad to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Get on while Larry. Thank you, bet. My pleasure. I was hoping to get on while Larry was still on, but...
Sorry, he had to go. What's on your mind?
I'm sure that Larry and you would agree that, you know, we talk a lot about how this country has been taken over by the foreign elites. But the main thing they have taken over is our court system. You know, the Constitution was founded on common law court system. You know, common law grand juries began 800 years ago in 1215, the Magna Carta. And it's taken these people over 100 years to eliminate the common law courts and change them all to chancery or statutory courts and laws. So, you know, I mean, the last common law court that we had in this country was in 1964 when you were 9 years old. But what I'd like to do really is bring to your attention and your millions of listeners a group out there that is doing some great work. They've been active for 31 months now. They're the National Liberty Alliance. Their website is nationallibertyalliance.org. And they've not only moved into the Oregon court case regarding the Hamming case now, but they've been what they're doing is setting up common law courts in all 3,133 counties in the United States.
Well, it's true, just like Mexico, when you end up basically having anarchy by the government, legitimate courts form, whether the government recognizes them or not, and I am aware of the history of common law courts and the rest of it, and they absolutely are constitutional if they're convened properly, and that goes back to Runnymede in 1215, as you said. And now they're just trying to get rid of regular juries altogether, and grand juries are these kept groups. I appreciate your call, Buckley. Let's go to Larry in Iowa. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, Alex, how are you doing?
Good, my friend.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in about the open registration in Iowa. Yeah, there's open net registration where a libertarian or a independent can sign up the night of.
I thought it was more closed, though. I thought it was harder. I mean, that's what I was.
No. I've been going to it for years, and I know there's voter fraud and all that stuff, but on that account,
sure. What do you think of Hillary winning 6 coin tosses in a row?
Well, I think it sounds pretty fishy, and it's just a testament to the power of the media when people just because the media says it, oh well, yeah, I guess it's possible, and we just take that, and you're the guy out there that says, hey, wait a minute, and that's good. And
I believe you. I'm just reading the articles here, but a lot of other major groups are saying that it's harder to do that. A lot of folks are so honest they don't. Even though they can flip over, it's still separate deals. And so they're saying that's why Trump didn't get more. All I know is he's way ahead in all the other polls, 10 to 20 points, 30 points in some, 18, 19, 20 points in New Hampshire, 25, 30 points in Michigan, just going to dominate. And if he doesn't, we know there's major, major hanky-panky. And they're telling us, his shine is worn off. It's over for him. The mystique is gone. That's the talking point from the establishment media. So whatever. I mean, I'll take a Ted Cruz over him. Marco Rubio, the bottom line is he's another Obama. All right, folks, David Knight coming up.
Listen, baby.
He aligns himself with the truth. You're listening to Alex Jones.
Listen, baby. Ain't no mountain high.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. I'll be taking over for Alex. He's feeling ill right now. And I'll have this the rest of this hour and, of course, into the fourth hour. We're hoping that Richard Reeves is going to be able to get back. His plane is on the way to Austin. We're hoping he's going to be able to join us in the fourth hour if he's not late with his plane. But, of course, we have a lot of news. We have your calls that are going to be coming up. I'll go up to Matt at FEMA 6 in Oregon. He wanted to talk about the Oregon standoff, and I just got back from Oregon reporting on what was up there. And there is some new information that I've seen coming out in terms of some evidence that's come out about that. I want to see what he has to say about that. Some interesting news, and here's kind of a victory, although it may be, as they point out on New American, one step forward and or two steps forward and one step back. Remember, at the end of December, we were talking about the fact that Virginia was going to revoke reciprocity with 25 states in terms of concealed carry. Now, this was something that was started by the Democrat Attorney General Mark Herring. I call him Red Herring because he is the idea that he needs to take away these concealed carry permits from states, many of whom do more thorough background checks and more continuous background checks than Virginia does. That really is a red herring, throwing people off the track, doing something just to harass gun owners, just to destroy the Second Amendment by infringing it around the edges. That's the way they're going to do it. They're not going to come out one day and say, we're taking all the guns. No, they do it by a gradual process. We understand that. We understand what your game is. We understand that's been the game for a very long time. So what they're trying to do in Virginia, first it was the Democrat Attorney General, Red Herring, and then he got the governor to sign on to this, Terry McAuliffe. Remember that name? the Clintons. He was Hillary's campaign manager for a while. That's really his only experience. This guy is a political operative. Now the governor of Virginia. That's the kind of deep area that we've gotten into here. Now, he stood behind this, as they point out in New American, a heavy-handed anti-gun approach. Virginia Republicans immediately reacted to the proposed legislation to overturn the decision. They put pressure on both the attorney general and the governor there in Virginia. A Republican delegate, Lee Ware, introduced legislation to take away the power of the state police to conduct surveys, such as the one on which Herring leaned to use his draconian exercise. Because you can get a survey to say anything, quite frankly. We know that from watching just watching the elections. And then Republicans who control both houses of Virginia legislature at one point, we reported this as well, considered to pull funding for Governor McAuliffe's armed state police bodyguards. Remember, they said, if you're so afraid of people having weapons who have been vetted by the state, I mean, this is not constitutional carry. This is being able to carry guns after you've jumped through a lot of inspection and approval and permission and privileges granted by the state. That's far beyond what the Constitution allows. But even when people go to that extra step, they didn't want to recognize that. So I said, if you're so afraid of guns, then what we will do is we will just not trouble you anymore with state police who have guns to protect you. Because these are guns that we have to protect ourselves. And we've jumped through, we've played all of your games, we've tried to cooperate with you. We pretend that our fundamental right, that is also our God-given right, that is recognized specifically in the Constitution, we try to pretend that that is somehow a privilege or a license that you are allowed to grant to us. So we'll play along with all these, your fantasy situation here. And even then, the Democrats want to take that away, the Democrat governor. But as they point out, this could be two steps forward and one step back, because now what they've said is that although they're going to restore the reciprocity, what they're going to do now is require that state police be present at all gun shows for voluntary background checks. There you go. There you go. Okay. So it's not entirely a victory, but it does show that we can push back. This is a situation within a state where the elected state representatives were able to shut down this gun control. And a lot of this is enacted at the state level. And so when we look at the election, and we are going to look at the election is important because there are issues that are discussed. There are bigger things that are happening. We can make our life a lot easier or a lot more difficult. But I think at a fundamental level that we need to understand that the fight is at the state level. And to give you another example of this, Tennessee, this is also an article from New American, is going to consider nullifying executive orders and Supreme Court decisions. They're talking about passing a law. This is in response, of course, to the fact that Obama has used, and it's not necessarily the quantity of executive orders. We saw the most number of executive orders were by FDR. And, of course, he used it to transform this country fundamentally. And I disagree with the way that FDR transformed this country very strongly. He used thousands of executive orders. He packed the Supreme Court. He used the Supreme Court as a means to somehow modify the Constitution in a very activist way. Going back to Marbury versus Madison, where the Supreme Court granted to itself the power to change the Constitution by saying they have final review of all laws and they can decide whether anything is constitutional or not. They basically said, we're above the Constitution, we will amend the Constitution, but now they've become very activist. And of course, the magnitude of the effects of Obama's executive orders are the issue. It isn't simply the quantity. An executive order could be something that is simply administrative for the different bureaucracies that are under the president. Or it can be something that flies in the face of what our elected representatives and Congress want. And Obama is clearly saying that. He says, well, I didn't get this from Congress, so I'm going to make it happen. I didn't get that from Congress, so I'm going to make it happen by executive order. That is the key. It isn't the quantitative issue. It's the qualitative issue. The way he is using it to override the other branches of government, to override the will of the people and our elected representatives. And so what do we do about this? Well, the rightful remedy is at the state level. That's the way we rein in an out-of-control executive. There is a division of powers within the federal government. That division of powers has now been destroyed. As they point out, the Congress has essentially turned over and become, as they put it in New American, accomplices in the obliteration of the Constitution. That's a great phrase. That's Joe Wolverton's phrase, accomplices in the obliteration of the Constitution with Barack Obama. I've talked about this before, how it's essentially an abdication of power by the Congress, not only to the president, but to the bureaucracies. It is a self-dissolution. We've seen situations where czars and kings have dissolved parliamentary bodies. Our Congress has done it to themselves. It's a self-dissolution. Now, how do you check this abuse of power? Well, one way to do it is at the state level, and that's a perfectly legitimate way to do it. The founders wanted to divide power at the central government, having an executive, a legislative, a judicial branch. They were so concerned about the consolidation of power. They were very concerned about that. They knew that power always concentrated and consolidated. So they divided the central government so that it wouldn't be too powerful, and they divided power between the central government and the states. And also, we'll say, with the people, because we have the ballot box, if it's working correctly, the jury box, if it's working correctly, and the cartridge box. Now, how do we get the states to assert their power so we don't have to use the cartridge box? Well, there's two bills in Tennessee, House Bill 1828, Senate Bill 1790, that would amend the Tennessee State Code to prohibit state and local governments from enforcing, administering, or cooperating with the implementation, regulation, or enforcement of any federal executive order or U.S. Supreme Court opinion unless the General Assembly, the state General Assembly, first expressly implements it as a public policy of the state. And as they point out in background, nullification is what Thomas Jefferson wrote was the rightful remedy. And of course, he wrote the Kentucky Resolutions in 1798 to point that out and goes back and looks at what some of the founders who wrote the Constitution said. We look at the original intent of the Constitution as well as the words. It helps us to understand the principles that they were trying to set up. If we don't like those principles, we can change them, but we need to abide by the rule of law or we have nothing left but a dictatorship. Now, Madison, considered to be the father of the Constitution, the father of the Bill of Rights, said the local or municipal authorities from distinct and independent portions of the supremacy, not more subject within their respective spheres to the general authority, that the general authority, then the general authority is subject to them within its own sphere. Now, to translate that into 21st century English, let's understand that what he is saying is that they are no more supreme in the federal government than the state is in their sphere of influence. In other words, you have not a pyramid structure with one all-seeing eye at the top, like you look at on the back of your dollar bill. That's not the power structure that the federal founders gave us, okay? And that symbol was added, that ominous symbol was added much, much later, I would say after we stopped being a republic. It was not a pyramid structure with an all-seeing eye on the top. It was independent spheres of influence. You have the federal government with their sphere of influence, the state governments with their sphere of influence. You have individuals and families with their sphere of influence. And each of them is just as important as the other. And there is no, unless there is some breakdown of power in a state, or unless just like there was a breakdown of, if there's a breakdown of power in the family, if the family is abusing their children, at that point, one of the other authorities penetrates that sphere of influence. But until and unless that happens, then the family, the home, the individual is every bit as sacrosanct, the man in his castle, as they say, right? It's every bit as sacrosanct in that power as the federal government is. This is a very important principle in this article. They even talk about how Alexander Hamilton, the guy who wanted a very strong central government, said, no, if they were to move in and take over things at the state level, that would be an act of usurpation. That is very key. And we understand that that really is what is behind the so-called Sagebrush Rebellion as well. Now, there's a lot of interesting side articles that are coming out. One of them I thought was very interesting was Jeb Bush. They say that he spent more than $5,000 per vote so far. This is the Washington Post. And when they look at this, I think they're talking about maybe nationalized spending. I've seen figures where he spent like $2,800 in Iowa, but that's still incredibly high. You know, the biggest loser in all this was Jim Gilmore. He spent only $100,000, but he only got 12 votes. That is astronomically bad. And he didn't drop out yet. That's the amazing thing to me is Jim Gilmore is hanging in there. For what? I don't understand. But when you look at this, the person who spent the least amount per vote was Donald Trump. He only spent $300 per vote. Marco Rubio spent twice that. Ted Cruz, about that same amount of money. Rick Santorum, up to $900 per vote. So it starts to accelerate as people get fewer and fewer votes. But Jeb Bush is the one who spent $5,200 to get 5,200 votes, $5,200 per vote in Iowa, according to the Washington Post. It's also interesting, I think, in terms of the character that I saw revealed from Ted Cruz in the last couple of days here. The things that happened with that flyer that went out. I mean, that was old school politics. You want to talk about somebody who says that they're not part of the Washington establishment? That's old school political dirty tricks, folks. That's as dirty as you'll have ever seen 40, 50, 60 years ago, okay? That was dirty stuff. And what he did to Ben Carson was also incredibly dirty. We alluded to that before. But listen, the caucuses started at 7 o'clock. At 7:01, the Cruz camp sent out this message. CNN is reporting that Ben Carson will stop campaigning after Iowa. Make sure to tell all your peers at the caucus supporting Carson that they should coalesce around the true conservative who will be in the race for the long haul, Ted Cruz. They set that out right as that was starting. The Carson campaign says they immediately came back and said that's not true. Ben Carson said, this is really quite a dirty trick. He said, that's the kind of thing that irritated me enough to get into this quagmire of politics. He says, have campaigns come out and send emails to their caucus speakers suggesting that Dr. Carson was doing anything but moving forward after tonight is the lowest of low in American politics, said a campaign manager of the Carson campaign. But Representative Steve King of Iowa, who was campaigning along with Cruz, then picked this up even after that had been denied by the Carson team. He sends out a tweet, says, Carson looks like he's out. Iowans need to know before they vote. Most will go to Cruz, I hope. So he tweets that out for everybody at the caucuses to tell everyone, well, hey, I think that Carson is dropping out. That's the kind of last-minute classical dirty tricks that we've seen over and over again. And I think what's going to happen in the future, and we've talked about this a little bit last night, in terms of the Democrats, the Iowa caucus has been a pretty accurate predictor going back to 1980 of who was going to win the nomination, with only a couple of exceptions. One when an Iowa senator ran, and he ran away with it. Another one when a nearby Missouri Senator Gephardt got won with 31%. Harkin won with 77%. He was the Iowa senator who ran. But with those two exceptions, with Democrats, they've pretty much picked who the final winner was going to be. With Republicans, not so much, okay? We had, as we've pointed out before, Santorum won the last one. Huckabee won the one before that. Bob Dole, who did go on to win the nomination, but he only narrowly beat Pat Buchanan. And then the one before that in 1988, we had Bob Dole getting 37%. He didn't win that year. Pat Robertson got 25%. He didn't win that year. Pat Robertson, okay? Pat Robertson, who didn't, he almost, he came close to, had a strong second, and he beat Bush, who came in third place. He beat the vice president in Iowa. Bush came in third place at 19%, went on to win the nomination in 1988 and to win the election in 1988, but he came in third place at 19%. Why is it that for the Republicans, Iowa is not a very good predictor? Well, Kurt Nimmo points out many reasons why things are going to change from here on out. But one of the reasons, I think, is because the Republican Party is very small in Iowa compared to the Democrat Party. And people realize when you go and when you look at the people who have won here, people like Pat Robertson, Pat Buchanan, Huckabee, Santorum, they win by appealing to a very strong, politically strong Christian minority in Iowa. But of course, it is a major force in the Iowa Republican Party. So if they can get the endorsement of people like Steve King and some others in Iowa, and what they do is they run way to the Christian side of things, and they essentially start holding revivals like we've seen Ted Cruz, and that tends to work against them as they move out of that area. And quite frankly, as a Christian, I don't like to see that. I don't like to see, because I've seen too many Elmer Gantries who wrap themselves in Jesus to sell me a product turn out to be real frauds and con men. And so it really puts me off. It doesn't bother me to hear somebody talk about their deep held convictions. I think that's fine. I don't want to shut that down. I'm not the ACLU. But you can go to a point and cross over. And I believe the Cruz campaign, along with Glenn Beck, have done that in this particular Iowa caucus. You can go to the other side and you can start telling people they should vote for you because you're a Christian because you know the Bible better than somebody else, and you can play Bible trivia, you can do biblical correctness with people, which was what we've seen in this campaign. That is really going to push back against him when he goes into other areas of the country. It's going to help him in the Bible Belt. It's going to help him in Iowa Republican Party, but it's going to push back against them in other areas. When they go to New Hampshire, that is going to be open to independents and to Democrats. And as the story from Kurt Nemo pointed out, there's about 25% in either of those categories that are very strongly Trump supporters. He appeals to the blue-collar workers who put Ronald Reagan in. And, you know, by the way, Ronald Reagan lost in Iowa. He lost to Bush the first time by 2 points, kind of like Trump. Reagan Democrats can change things, and I think we're going to see that change as we move forward. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. We're going to be going to your calls in just a moment. We have Richard Reeves is going to be joining us from Iowa in the fourth hour. Before we get to your calls, I want to let you know about a flash sale, a 24-hour flash sale that's going on at InfoWarsLife.com. And that is 15% off Silver Bullet. And if you get it with AutoShip, that means that you're going to set up an automatic shipment to replace this as it goes out. We will give you another 10% off with AutoShip. So if you sign up for AutoShip, you get an additional 10% off. But anyone can get 15% off, and that's a flash sale going on right now. Silver Bullet, colloidal silver. It is concentrated to a powerful 30 parts per million in a base of deionized water. It stores for years, whether it's an economic meltdown or any other kind of collapse. Experts admit that colloidal silver is essential to have on hand. Again, you can get that 15% off, save an additional 10% off if you sign up for AutoShip. Get that at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com while supplies last. And also, we have free shipping on all orders of $50 or more. Now, I want to go to our callers. Before we do, just real quickly, we've had a lot of coverage in terms of breakdown of demographics in this vote. And it looks like so many college students are breaking either for Ron Paul or for Bernie Sanders. I find it very interesting. Not Ron Paul, but Rand Paul. Of course, they went for Ron Paul, his father, before. And now a lot of them are going for Bernie Sanders. And I think they're confused as to where they're going to get the resources for socialism. I want to play Rand Paul talking about the difference between him and Bernie Sanders, because we have to understand what socialism is truly about. Here's that clip.
The point that I try to make is, you know, you do well as a principled progressive. And I can do this with Dennis Kucinich, whom I know very well. And say, well, you know, you don't want to use force in the military. You want to protect civil liberties, and you don't like all this war. And sometimes Dennis and I would be the only two voting against some war position. But I said, why, and I proposed this to Barney too, is why is it that you won't apply that same principle to, you know, that you apply to social engagement, you know, in social and sexual matters? Hands off, as long as it's voluntary. I know the government just should be out of it. They should be out of marriage and everything else. And they agree with that. I said, why don't you apply that to economics? And they come up and they said, they understand the consistency. They say, well, it's different because freedom in markets allow people to become too rich, you know, and then they run it and they own everything, and they will not listen to the argument that there's a difference between somebody getting bailed out by the Federal Reserve and they're on the special list versus somebody who produces a good product and we vote them their money and they haven't cheated or stolen or given us bad products and they make a lot of money. Why? I think it's sort of an envy and resentment. But I talked to them, but I have to tell you that so far I haven't converted many diehard progressives, because some progressives, if you watch it on the internet, will have really close agreements, and they might, you know, be talking about the same issue, but boy, they don't want to even introduce the notion that the libertarians are with them on this, because they're terrified that we might encroach on their power to redistribute wealth. So it's a tough argument, but that's because they have a stronger belief. Others are sort of in the middle, and they can be influenced, and they can be converted.
Okay, and again, that's Ron Paul. I was saying it was Rand Paul. You can find that video at InfoWars.com. Look, it boils down to this. We want freedom. Progressives and socialists want free stuff. It's not sustainable. Just like you cannot force an equality of results. You can only truly have and press for an equality of opportunity. There's a big difference. It may sound like it's subtle, but it makes all the difference in the world. We'll be right back.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're going to go to some of your calls right now. Let's go to Matt in FEMA Region 6 about the Oregon standoff. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, how's it going? I just had some information about, Alex had said something the other day that kind of tipped me off. I'm sure everybody's been watching the Oregon standoff since it happened. Just like all of the major events like that that happen, I was pretty much glued to every live stream source that I could get. And during that time frame, I became aware of a guy that was down there live streaming pretty much every day. And then, you know, I started to think, wow, he's kind of putting out stuff that I wouldn't put if I was in that operation. But, you know, hey, freedom of press. Well, started doing some more research onto it, especially in the coming days of this last week. And Alex had specifically said something that tipped me off on the show. And I believe it was last Monday, I think. He had said something along the lines of, you know, when you have, you know, military type situation and you know, all your things start not working out right, you start to wonder, hey, you know, maybe there's a mole, if you will. But further than that, it always comes down to the communications guy, is what he said. And that makes a lot of sense. And didn't think much about it at the time when he said that, but then later that night started to come across information that solved that riddle, because the guy that I was talking about, I'll just go ahead and name him. I hate to give him any sort of airtime.
Yeah, I wouldn't make any claims about anybody directly, publicly. And look, you know, everybody can draw their own conclusions about this. I'm just concerned. I'm concerned about what happened to Lavoie Finicum, and I'm concerned that this has become a situation where they've allowed, it's been a PR disaster, where they have allowed the mainstream media to get away with what they're always going to do. They're always going to portray them as a bunch of yahoos and clowns and everything. But then they reinforce that by doing these sumo wrestler videos and so forth and so on. And now with this roadblock and the killing of Lavoie Finicum, they have now been able to successfully say, well, look, they're dangerous. Who shot? The only people who had any guns that were used were the law enforcement that were there. Now we've got these few yahoos that are left up there. They're going to basically trash that area, and they're going to perhaps go out violently, and that's all that anybody's going to remember about this. They were on their way to a meeting to meet with 400 people and the sheriff in the adjacent county to talk about what could be done about the oppressive policies of the federal government's quote-unquote land management. And we've talked about that in depth. I've got another report that's going to be coming out with a guy who is in the logging industry. That is the fundamental problem right there. And the way that the overbearing, excessive use of force by the federal government against people that were in the Bundy area ranch, that were against people there in that area, the Hammonds. But I think the fundamental mistake that the Bundy family made was going out of their area. We understand that if we're going to fight the federal government, I think they understand that too. It is a local fight. They should have kept that fight local. They should have kept it in Nevada. They should have kept it in Utah, where the neighbor knows neighbor and they can stand together and they know each other, who they are, instead of going to a new area and allowing their unknown status to be used by the press, by the federal government, to make people fearful of them. They were peaceful. I just saw this on Facebook today. Somebody sent this to me from someone's Facebook account. Barbara Davis says, well, Lavoie Finicum's body is home now. I'm absolutely sickened. It was shot 9 times. And we had the FBI agent said, well, you know, how many times did you guys shoot at Lavoie and the car? Oh, I would say it's in single digits. Well, they shot Lavoie 9 times. There will be no open casket. The FBI shot him in the face. Right after it happened, I pulled out put out a call for the serial number off the 9mm gun, the pistol the FBI claims that he had in his pocket. The Pacific Patriots Network just sent me an email back. The 9mm came back stolen 2 years ago. The FBI planted the gun on him, serial number 54119868. You need to look that up. He had his own gun. Lavoie Finicum is not the kind of guy who'd be going around in black markets buying an illegal gun. He had perfectly good rights to own his own gun. He left his own gun back at the refuge center. So that looks very suspicious to me. There's another riddle here, and that's the riddle of the riddled car. Why won't they show us the number of shots?
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Came in last night at half past ten.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host for this fourth hour. We're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Richard Reeves, our correspondent from the Iowa caucuses last night when we had our live election coverage. And of course, Richard is going to be going to New Hampshire as well to cover in the next week. He's going to be there as that vote is being taken and also the lead up to that. But we want to talk to him and get some of his direct impressions of what happened there. We're going to be going to your phone calls here in just a moment. Anne, Brad, Tommy, Guerra, hang on there. I'm going to get to you in just one moment. I wanted to finish up with what I was saying about the situation in the Oregon standoff. Joe Biggs and I were there at the end of last week reporting on what was going on. There was an excellent video that went up. And, of course, I cut my own video looking at analyzing what the FBI had put out along with their commentary about it. The fact that they would give us such incredibly low-resolution video shot from above as they're circling around. Many times it was obscured by trees. There was absolutely no sound. They have cameras over everything. You can see that feed right there as they're looking at it. They have cameras on all their cars. They have cameras on their person. You know that with law enforcement, right? Nevertheless, they give us this incredibly low-res video, so we can't really see what's going on with any detail. Now, one of the things that happened as they were doing this, if you guys can back that up just a little bit, as they were doing this, of course, there's the shooting of Lavoie. As he's coming up to that roadblock, we have another article that's on Infowars.com. We have a retired law enforcement officer talk about this. As you can see, when he came up there to that roadblock, they have created what this retired law enforcement officer said was a deadly roadblock. He said, whenever you put cars in the road and you give the person who is a fleeing occupant, the only alternative is to hit those cars or to go off the road in a dangerous way at a high speed. You're using deadly force. He says you cannot create the exigency, the urgency, if the person that you are following is a known person. They knew exactly who these guys were. They've been following them airily probably since they left the refuge. They were on their way, by the way, to talk to people. The local community was not afraid of them. There were 400 people who had showed up at that meeting. The sheriff, the local sheriff, was set to speak at that meeting. Somebody who has been sympathetic, very sympathetic to the needs of the local community in terms of natural resource management, trying to work with this overbearing federal government to find a way that these people cannot be driven completely into a third world economy. And they have massive unemployment in this area, probably 50% unemployment in this area based on the person that we were talking to. They've put out the logging industry that was so vital there. They have put them out of business. All but one of the milling companies has been closed because the federal government would not even allow them to cut the standing deadwood. They had a massive fire last summer because of that policy. And they won't even let them cut down many of the dead trees that have been burned. If they're over 21 inches, they can't even cut down those trees. So those trees will become fuel for further fires because they would rather have this place burned down than to allow these people to earn a living. So that's one aspect of it. That was this peaceful aspect that the Bundys and Lavoie Finicum were trying to talk about. But now we have another shooting by the police, excessive use of force. Many of us look at this and believe that that was absolutely unnecessary. And just as we investigate the shootings in urban areas, we should investigate this. But isn't it interesting that we always have the people, if you are opposed to what these people are saying or doing politically, or you don't have any sympathy for that group, you're immediately going to side with the government, say they should be killed. I am absolutely disgusted by the liberals who are calling for a violent resolution to this issue all along and are cheerleading this and are calling for even more violence in this area. Now, what the police officer said, beside the fact that, you know, you cannot use deadly force if you know that these people are not violent fleeing felons. They knew who they were. They knew exactly where they were going. That's why they set that roadblock up there. That's why they did it in a place where they had no cell phone coverage. They should not have been using deadly force. And that comes even before the discussion as to whether or not Lavoie Finicum was trying to reach into or under his coat to try to get a weapon that may or may not have been there. Now, there's some other interesting things that this retired police officer points out that I didn't know, didn't think about because I'm not a police officer. He says, when you look at this shooting, you see the one officer who runs out of the roadblock with the gun pointed out at Lavoie Finicum, he leaves cover. He breaks cover. And he breaks cover and gets behind this car that is supposedly so dangerous that they're going to use lethal force to stop it. And so he gets out there and breaks cover. He's behind the car that supposedly is such a threat to them, exposing himself to being shot by them. Right there. Hold it right there. See, he's standing right there behind the car that Lavoie Finicum got out of. And I believe, and we've had eyewitness testimony of two women who were in the car, both said that the reason Lavoie took off, they were sitting there at the prior roadblock, a mile or more up the road. The reason they took off was because as a driver, Ryan Payne stuck his hand and his head out of the car. They took a shot at him and hit the side mirror of the car. And that's why when he got out of the car, Lavoie took off. And other people have said that he got out of the car knowing Lavoie Finicum. He probably got out of the car because he was trying to draw fire away from the people in the car. Once they shot Lavoie Finicum, then they went after the car. Maybe now it's a danger because they've got eyewitnesses to a murder in there. Maybe that's why they shot it. Now, the other thing that happens coming up at Laurel, okay, stop it right there. That guy who comes up out of the woods right there, he is pointing at Lavoie Finicum, and he's got his own fellow officers in a crossfire if he misses Lavoie Finicum. Now, we can't tell when those shots are done because the FBI conveniently doesn't give us any sound on this. But now we know that he's been shot 9 times. Was he, when his hands came down, was that in reaction to being shot? We can't know that because the FBI won't show us that. The FBI lied initially and said 3 shots were fired. Then when they questioned him further, when they released this, the FBI said, well, it would be in the single digits. They put 9 shots in Lavoie Finicum by himself. And then you can see afterwards with the snow that is hitting the vehicle, they continue with a barrage of shooting at the vehicle, according to the eyewitness testimony. And you can even see it on the video. They're throwing grenades, flash grenades at him, tear gas grenades at the people who are in the car. They never did anything. They never did any shooting. They were known by the law enforcement officers exactly who they were, where they were going. They did not need to resolve this in a violent way. If you were somebody who is an occupier and you hate these people because they're farmers and that, you need to understand that we all need to stand together against the excessive use of force. We cannot tolerate this because you don't agree with somebody politically. It's beyond that. It's like saying we're going to let Obama do whatever he wants on this particular issue because I agree with him on that issue. Or we're not going to let him because I don't agree with him on that issue, but we're going to let the Republicans do it when they come in. That's what. So we need to understand that executive orders countermanding the wishes of our elected officials are wrong, regardless of what you think about the issue. That's where we need to come down on this. That's where we need to understand we have to have a rule of law. We have to have a rule of law when we create the laws. We have to have the rule of law when we enforce the laws. When we look at a shooting like this, it ought to make you sick. It shouldn't be celebrated on social media like we're seeing from the lefties, calling them Y'al-Qaeda. They were not violent. The only people who used violence were the government. They were protesters. They have a constitutional right to peaceful assembly. It should never have been resolved this way. I think it would have been far better if instead of taking over that wildlife refuge, they should never have done that. They should have gone around and held these meetings without having taken over that refuge. But that's when they became really dangerous to Governor Kate Brown. That's what they were really concerned about. Let me tell you, when they go to a neighboring county where the sheriff is sympathetic to the use of natural resources and deputizes some citizens to have a natural resource committee to try to work with the federal government to try to keep these people on the land, and that gets shut down by a judge, The Oregon state government, the federal government, they're working together to put these people off the land, to shut down the land rights because they want to take away the economy there. They want to get the people off the land. They want to shut down any kind of surface or mineral rights that people have had for generations, shut down the economy. They can turn this over to the federal government, and then people like Harry Reid or John McCain can sell these mineral rights to foreign corporations like they're doing in Arizona. Resolution Copper, they're going to go in. They're going to destroy this area. It's a recreational area. It is an historical area to the Indians. It's a religious area to the Indians. And it's a beautiful, pristine wilderness. They're going to turn this over to a foreign copper company that is going to turn this into a giant crater with the kind of radical mining that they would never allow anybody in the United States to do. But once they get this into a mass, they're no longer worried about the environment, okay? Understand, that is simply a beard, just like we saw in Nevada. So that's what you need to be concerned about. There's so many multiple levels here in this story. We could just camp out on this one story forever, but we can't. There are other things that are happening to us and around us, and we need to cover the big picture. But you need to take a look at this. Do not let this murder go unanswered, uninvestigated. They won't show the car. We can't see how many bullets there are in the car. They've held this car from people. So they are not playing openly with the American people. When the FBI agent who is narrating this low-resolution, soundless film says that Lavoie Finicum is trying to run down their agent when he swerves to avoid the cars that are doing the roadblock there, and you have an agent who jumps out from behind the cars in the roadblock, leaps out in front of his vehicle, and then he turns farther to the left to try to avoid him. I mean, that's absolute insanity. I don't know what that agent is thinking. I don't know what the agent is thinking when he breaks cover and gets behind this so-called dangerous car, or the other agent that comes in and exposes his guys to crossfire, starts shooting at the direction of Lavoie Finicum and his own fellow agents at the same time. At the very least, this is Keystone Cops. At the worst, it's premeditated murder. Now, let's go back to your calls. Let's go to the next one that we... But no time. We don't have any time for calls. We're going to take the calls when we come back. Real quickly, you know, when we look at this, one of the things that came out of this election last night, comments from Russell Berman on The Atlantic. He said, Microsoft says the outages of the GOP reporting website were the result of the two parties' overwhelmed servers, not its own technology. Of course, we would never have a problem with Microsoft, the people who gave us Windows, the people who made this whole process so complicated and so vulnerable, and that was by design. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're going to get back to your calls, I promise. We're going to go first to Ann in California. Real quickly, before we do, there's a 24-hour flash sale on Silver Bullet. Right now, we have it at 15% off at InfoWarsLife.com. And if you sign up for AutoShip with Silver Bullet, you get an additional 10% off. So it's 15% off plus 10% off if you sign up for AutoShip. And again, Silver Bullet is our concentrated formula of powerful 30 parts per million silver in a base of deionized water. It stores for years, and it is something that is essential to have on hand. You can get it right now, just a 24-hour flash sale at InfoWarsLife.com, 15% off, plus an additional 10% off if you sign up for AutoShip to resupply on a monthly basis. Let's go now to Ann in California. Thank you, Ann, for waiting for so long. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and I'd like to say I also want to thank you and InfoWars for speaking truth to tyranny in this country.
Well, thank you. We try.
I was listening to you talk about. I am going to talk about the primaries and what happened in Iowa, but just a side note about Oregon. I think that's a perfect microcosm of what is going wrong with this country. They take American citizens and they turn them into caricatures, which makes them non-human people, and so therefore you can do whatever you want to them. And
first they assassinate your character, then they assassinate you. Exactly. Yeah, it's a long technique.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I must say, I am for Donald Trump, and I first was like Rand Paul, and but in one of the debates, I think he took a wrong turn, and so I went for Trump. And what I wanted to get across is this. I was watching one of the debates, and in the debate, Ted Cruz had mentioned to Donald Trump that his mother was Scottish. And the day before that, I just finished watching the movie Braveheart. And what came to my mind was the word freedom when he yells it out at the end. And I think that also spelled it out for me, that this is what this country is looking for. It's looking for someone that wants to yell out freedom and liberty and get back to the fundamentals of our country where I grew up in, where the civil rights movement was able to come into fruition, and we got all these positive things from it. But
yes,
I think what we're doing now is we're taking all these good things and they're twisting them, like the EPA. It's in, if you look at the EPA, it's a good idea, but they're taking it and they're making it not such a good idea.
Or you take something like free trade. Donald Trump is probably the only candidate there, except perhaps Rand Paul, who would oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Partnerships. Understand, they're not even partnerships. They're treaties, and the Congress has already voted to ignore the constitutional process for treaties. But it's also about our sovereignty. If you want free trade, you don't need to have a several thousand-page document, four times the collected works of William Shakespeare. You don't need something like that to create free trade. You just have free trade. So to say that this is about free trade or not free trade is a head fake. It's a beard. It's not true. You need to look at what is underlying this. This is about far more than that. It's about our own sovereignty. It's about taking over the internet. It's about taking over our free speech, our freedom to own things, about establishing a copyright. Now, Donald Trump opposes that simply by saying it's a bad deal. Okay, he doesn't get into all of the details of it. I wish he would talk about that, but that's not his style. He just simply says it's a bad deal. But it's our only chance, really, to shut down the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And, Anne, when you talk about the debate, when Cruz said, well, it came up in the context of who was a natural-born citizen. He says, well, your mother was a Scot. And, you know, she was an American citizen by the time Donald Trump was born. And his on his father's side, he goes back to the 1880s. Donald Trump was born in America. Both of his parents were American citizens at the time of his birth. And that's typical of the kind of sly, evasive answers that we've seen from Ted Cruz, the lying, evasive answers. His professor, Lawrence Tribe at Harvard, said, look, you can believe that that's important or not important. Lawrence Tribe said, I don't care about the natural born citizen. But he goes, Ted Cruz tells us that the kind of Supreme Court judge that he would appoint would be a strict a constitutionalist, a strict originalist. And he goes, the kind of judge that Ted Cruz tells us that he would support would say that Ted Cruz is not a natural born citizen. It's just that clear. So if Ted Cruz, who has argued before the Supreme Court about issues, why can't he tell us that the basis for why he is a natural born citizen, having been born in Canada, where his father was a Canadian citizen and his mother was an American citizen living in Canada? Why can't he tell us his constitutional basis for why he's eligible to even run for president? Instead, what he does is he muddies the water by saying your mother was Scottish, not saying that she was an American citizen at the time, saying your mother is Scottish, and that would mean that Marco Rubio couldn't even run. Well, yeah, Marco Rubio is an anchor baby. He was born in America, but his parents weren't citizens at the time. And as Wayne Madsen pointed out, we got to take a look at how they got here. They were working for the casino mobster Meyer Lansky in Cuba and then moved to Vegas. That's their background. Thank you so much. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Richard Reeves, who was in Iowa yesterday. We'll be right back.
Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and joining me now in studio is Richard Reeves. Our reporter was on the ground in Iowa last night and prior to that, and he's going to be going to New Hampshire to cover what's happening there up to and including the election that's going on in New Hampshire. Welcome back, Richard. You just got off the plane.
Yes, sir. We just arrived about 45 minutes ago, got our bag and got over here, did a quick shave. But anyway,
well,
that's not
for
what the folks came to hear.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of information to download about the Iowa caucuses last night. I was able to stream a little bit of the show earlier with Alex talking about the Microsoft angle, the potential fraud in so many ways. You had people on the Ted Cruz, you know, I don't know how extensive it was, but Ted Cruz workers that were at caucuses saying that Ben Carson had dropped out.
Yes, we talked about that movie.
Come Ted Cruz's way. We don't know how vast that was. But one thing we can talk about that I know did happen is ever since last Thursday when we had Donald Trump do the alternative event, raising the money for the veterans, stepping out of the Fox News debate, we've had the media start saying, Marco Rubio is having a surge. Marco Rubio's having a surge. You know, just over and over and over.
At the very least, that's push polling.
Definitely, it's driving an audience because remember this. Let's go on the Wayback Machine, folks. Remember this, guys. A lot of you guys were listeners in 2008, and you were working for the Ron Paul campaign. And you remember that late November of 2007, December 2007, Mike Huckabee is on a surge. Mike Huckabee's on a surge, and then voila, Mike Huckabee wins the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right. And, of course, they can move things a little bit using that technique, and then they can move things a little bit with their control of the election situation, right, as we've seen with Hillary. I mean, it's really obvious the Democrats are hopping mad. As I pointed out last night, it's going to be interesting to see whether the Microsoft can be the blue screen of death for Bernie Sanders.
You know? Right. And we'll talk about the Democrat race in a little bit, but I want to kind of elaborate a little bit more on what I saw. Is I want to use the Wayback Machine a little bit more about regarding the Marco Rubio surge and the Ted Cruz number one result, Donald Trump number two. Is in 2010, we had a race here in Texas, the governor's race with Rick Perry. It was a three-way race. We actually had an independent candidate that was running named Deborah Medina.
I know her.
And I did a YouTube video. I did a YouTube video Saturday about this, and we didn't get it uploaded yet, but it'll be uploaded soon, where I do kind of an analysis of the phenomenon that what I think part of what happened. I think it's a confluence of things. I think it's Microsoft. I think it's all this stuff combined put together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But
They never do. They never put all their cards on just one horse. I mean, they don't use just one strategy. That's why we need to be smart and not just use one strategy. They use multiple. It's a multi-pronged attack.
Okay? It is.
It's air, land, and sea. Okay?
It's wheels within wheels, folks. Yeah. It's wheels within wheels. We've said it right here on the stage before that politically we have been the JV team for many years. We need to graduate to pro because that's who we're up against. We're against professional political teams. Now, one of the things, going back to this 2010 thing I wanted to explain about, is where Rick Perry had two competitors, Deborah Medina, which was an independent candidate, and then he had an unknown Democrat. Deborah Medina, as an independent candidate, was better known, more well-known here in Texas than Chris Bell. Most people in Texas, Chris Bell, you know, doesn't even ring a bell. You know, I mean, they didn't know who he was. So what happened, though, is Rick Perry, starting about 2 months before the general election in 2010, started just bombarding negative attacks on Chris Bell. And also, the ads were designed to scare would-be Deborah Medina voters back into the Rick Perry camp.
Yeah.
And they were also designed to fire up whatever Democrats thinking, oh, you know what? Chris Bell might actually have a chance in the state of Texas. Let's get behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So that dropped, you know, Deborah Medina at one point in 2010 was polling like close to 30%, which was not that far. It was 5 or 10 points within Rick Perry. And that strategy, though, of Rick Perry's attacks, it was genius, really. I mean, he had plenty of money. He spent money on the ads. He pushed more people in the Chris Bell camp. His ads, because they were negative ads, making people fear that, oh, my gosh, if we get split this way and people vote Deborah Medina, that, oh, all of a sudden, no, Deborah Medina won't win. No, Rick Perry won't win. It'll be Chris Bell, a Democrat, that'll win. So that scared people back into the Rick Perry camp. So that's kind of what I saw happen
in that race.
The battle between Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. That kind of fired up both those camps, the Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio camp, and then the Donald Trump camp thinking, hey, you know, the polls were all saying they're going to win. So, therefore, they don't make the phone calls.
Yeah.
They don't knock on the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the game, too.
Now, in that race with Deborah Medina, didn't Glenn Beck have her on and talk to her about being a 9/11 truther or whatever, and then she got kind of wishy-washy about that, and that really kind of split her support? Didn't that happen?
Unfortunately, Deborah Medina was not prepared for the 9/11 question, even though I personally had discussed with staff close to her, be ready for 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And
Interesting, though, it was Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck torpedoed.
You can always count on Glenn to be there.
Glenn Beck torpedoed Deborah Medina, and also Mark Davis up in Dallas on a big one of those big AM affiliates there.
Well, I think it's really huge, the things that we saw Ted Cruz do, and I just mentioned it with one of the callers when the issue of natural born citizen came up. His idea was to muddy the water by saying, well, then that means that Marco Rubio couldn't run, and that means that even you couldn't run, Donald, because your mother is Scottish, even though she was an American citizen at the time of his birth, and he was born in America and so forth. So he muddies the water. He doesn't give us a clear statement as to why he thinks he is a natural-born citizen. Instead, he does this kind of evasive stuff. We see what he did with the flyer, and then what he did with Ben Carson was one of the dirtiest, most classical dirty tricks I've seen, telling everybody right as the caucus is starting, sending out social media statements, and from people who are supporting him, Steve King, who's very well known in Iowa, a state representative there, or a congressman, I don't know what his position. Anyway,
David, okay, yeah. Now,
and doing that at the time because they were dividing the Christian vote, and that's the huge thing in Iowa. That's one of the reasons why Iowa is not very predictive of future success for Republican nominees, is because it's a small party and it's heavily been taken captive by these Christian kingmakers there.
Right. And unfortunately, I've been on the road, so bring me up to speed. How widespread was this situation with Ted Cruz and his minions working the caucuses, giving the caucuses misinformation about Ben Carson? Do we know how widespread that was?
I don't know how widespread it was, but it was Steve King who tweeted it out, and that was also on the Cruz Facebook, saying, you know, he's leaving the campaign, so you need to stick with the person who is going to be here after this, and that real person is Ted Cruz. So they're telling everybody that Carson is dropping out, so tell all of your caucus voters to do this. So if Steve King does this and Cruz does this, the people who were there at the caucus with their phones are going to know this, and they did it as the caucus was starting at 7:01, and after Steve King puts this back out. And Steve King did that after the Carson campaign came back and said, no, I'm not getting out. So he did know that that was the situation. So I find that very telling. It's the sort of thing, I've always had a bad feeling about Ted Cruz. I've always felt that he was adopting some libertarian positions just so he could take that momentum away from Rand Paul. I felt like he really didn't have his heart in it when he's talking about auditing the Fed. He doesn't bother to show up for that. Just so many different issues, but it's the dirtiness of this campaign that...
Right, really well, bothered. I guess where the final straw on that will come out is if we find out if Steve King was the one that really came up with that idea and fired it independently, or, you know, was he under the watchful eye of Senator Ted Cruz himself? That's where we're going to find out. So I'm sure that'll come out as time goes by. So I'll tell you what, there's a cornucopia of angles about the Iowa caucuses, but here's an overall good thing that I would say is what I keep looking at and I keep talking about are when you add up the anti-establishment poll numbers, perceived anti-establishment, Trump, Carson, Cruz, Fiorina, Rand Paul. When you add those up, it came up to right about 67-68%. So that's a super majority. It's just right over that two-thirds threshold. You know, if we see it drop down to 65 or 60, that gives Marco Rubio the lane he needs. Folks, we need to, at one point, I was seeing those numbers for anti-establishment candidates when you added them all up. At one point, I was seeing that as high as 75-80%. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of back down a little bit. And now we've got supposed real results to look at with the Iowa caucuses to get these anti-establishment votership percentages. So it's
and of course, Sanders, I would say, is anti-establishment. I don't support Sanders because I don't support socialism. But nevertheless, what we're seeing here is the machine, the Democrat machine, coming to bear with all of its power. We saw them doing it in terms of cutting down the number of debates, scheduling them on weekends and on, you know, the Saturday, last Saturday before Christmas, on a night when they're having football playoffs and so forth, only doing four of them. They're going to do an additional one. But nevertheless, they're pulling out every stop from every angle. We see this stuff about the corn tosses, I guess it's Iowa, right?
They might as well do corn over there. I love the people of Iowa. They were great.
Yeah.
Fantastic folks in Iowa. We've got a ton of InfoWarriors over there, Alex Jones fans. I can't tell you how many people walked up. You know, they see the flag on the microphone. They don't necessarily recognize me yet because I haven't been on that much. But when they see that flag on that microphone, they make a beeline to me and, you know, say hello, shake my hand, and they all want to say, you know, hey, tell Alex hello. So, folks, right now I'm telling Alex hello for you guys.
That's great. Now, you know, we've got these articles. Like, here's one from USA Today talking about the improbability of the coin toss, the fact she won six in a row, but also the fact that in these various caucus locations, precincts, they have one in particular where all of a sudden they do a count and then they do a recount after they redistribute the Martin O'Malley votes. And now there's 60 votes that are apparently missing, but Hillary comes up in the lead. We see this happening in multiple places. You've got Microsoft coming in, offering an application. Look, all we're doing is we're doing simple addition and then transmitting a number to another location. How complicated is that task? You don't need computers and iPhone apps and tablets. You don't need all of this stuff to just do simple addition, to write a number down, take a picture of it, send it as a text file, send it as an email, ask Hillary how to send emails. You know, you can do it that way.
He would do Snapchat.
So, you know, I mean, the system that they had before where they got to use a touch tone phone and key in numbers, I understand that's a stupid idea, okay? There's a number of ways going back, even if you want to go back to old fax machine technology. There's no reason that you need to have Microsoft interject itself in here. They complicate it, and that is by design.
Well, it is by design, and I'm sure they've probably violated laws because, David, that's like I've worked as an election judge this upcoming first Tuesday in March here in Texas. I won't be the election judge itself, but I will be the Republican alternate judge. I can't be electioneering. I can't be saying, hey, guys, when you're coming in the door, by the way, so-and-so is going to win.
That's right.
You know, so,
yeah, there's no campaigning within a certain number of feet of the...
That's right. You can't be wearing buttons and signs, you can't have all that stuff. It's got to be a certain distance away. And so Microsoft, in their fiduciary responsibility to be running this Iowa event, I think a lawsuit needs to be brought. Why they haven't talked to lawyers already, I don't know.
Somebody and we see the Microsoft candidates doing incredibly well. Marco Rubio, all of a sudden coming from very low in the polls, a very distant third, coming up to a very close third, close to a second poll.
And let me tell you, Marco Rubio did not do near the work that, I mean, Ted Cruz, hey, by the way, Ted Cruz, I do want to congratulate you for winning Iowa caucus because he did the work. I'm telling you, he shook out of all the Republican candidates, probably out of any candidates, Ted Cruz shook the most hands, looked the most people in Iowa in the eyes, said hello, took a question. You know, he did the full Grassley, the 99 counties. And so, you know, he had the turnouts. He had the turnouts. So, you know, he legitimately earned that victory. So you really kind of had three styles of campaign in operation. You had Ted Cruz on the ground, and I'm sure he had on-air ads, et cetera, TV, you name it, interviews on Fox, CNN, all that. But then Donald Trump with the air campaign, where he does a flyover in Dubuque, Iowa with the Trump Boeing and has massive crowds and all that. But basically, all the neocon candidates, including Marco Rubio, pretty much for most of the month of January, were not present in Iowa.
Yeah.
Marco, I mean, he had good turnout in his events. But I'll give you an example with Marco Rubio. We attended an event for Marco Rubio Sunday at the DoubleTree Hotel in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He probably had a crowd of 500 or 600 on a Sunday afternoon, and I think it's about 3 p.m. In that range. And then yesterday, Monday afternoon at 1:30, Donald Trump has 1,000 people.
Yeah,
on a work day.
Yeah,
you know, when people are not necessarily free to attend, they're there. He's got double the people on a schedule that, you know, hey, people should be at work or business, taking care of things like that. So that gives you an idea of the difference in crowd levels. And
Of course, I remember, 4 years ago when Santorum supposedly won, you know, he walks in the night before into a bar with his crew and everybody's yelling at him, shut up, sit down, we can't see the television. They don't care who he is. And yet you've got Ron Paul with massive crowds, but then, you know, somehow Santorum wins that. But I want to talk about what they did with the building expectations, because this is another classical technique, just like we saw with Ted Cruz at the last minute, releasing something negative or telling a lie about some other candidate, which is what they did at the caucus, telling people that Ben Carson was dropping out. The other classic technique that they use is to inflate expectations for a candidate artificially and with the mainstream media. And then when that candidate doesn't meet those expectations, then they say, loser, loser. That's what they did to Donald Trump.
Exactly.
They come out and they say, look, you know, he's got momentum. He's like 3 or 4 points ahead of Cruz and Iowa. Now that's within the margin of error. So the pollsters and the corporations are not hanging themselves out on a limb. They're still saying, well, that's within the margin of error. Okay, but they use it to say that he's got momentum. And then when it goes the other way, and instead of him being 3% ahead, he's 3% behind and comes in second, they say, look at this. He's a loser. He's lost it all. I guess it's time for him to throw in the towel. That's what I'm hearing throughout the mainstream media. You know, when you turn on NPR, all the rest of them, it's like, oh, Donald Trump is just out of it now.
So basically right now, if you take these, if you take this segment that we just started from the bottom of this hour until right now in its totality, then basically we've almost exposed the whole New World Order modus operandi on all this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a classic technique. We know how they use polls. I mean, one of the other things that they'll typically do is do a push poll the day of and start calling people up and say, you know, did you know that this guy was caught robbing banks or whatever? And it's totally false. Or what would you think if somebody told you about that? You know, just float something out there and get them to just plant that seed of that idea out there to see if people will get that into their subconscious and then to turn people against that individual. But, yeah, it truly is amazing as to what happened, I think, with the Cruz campaign talking about Ben Carson getting their chief surrogate there in Iowa to repeat that as the caucus is going and sending that out in social media saying, tell everybody at the caucus, Ben Carson is dropping out, because he was a big threat to them because it was that core block of Christian Republicans that really does run the Iowa caucus, the kingmakers that are there. And that's one of the reasons why Iowa has really become irrelevant in terms of the GOP. It's very accurate with the Democrats because it's largely a Democrat state. But when it comes to Republicans, it's very, very inaccurate. And that goes all the way back to Ronald Reagan, who lost to George H.W. Bush in Iowa in 1980 when Reagan went on to win in a landslide the rest of the way. He lost in Iowa by 2 points. So it is not over. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here with Richard Reeves, our reporter who just got back from Iowa. He was there last night giving us his insight into that. We want to go back and talk about the Democrats. We also have some callers on the line. We're going to try to at least get to Adam in Iowa to get his impression about what's going on there. Real quickly, before we do, we have a 24-hour flash sale. That's why I want to let you know about it. It's only for today. Just for the next 24 hours only, you can get Silver Bullet for 15% off. And if you sign up for AutoShip, you can get an additional 10% off. So that's 15% off plus an additional 10% off if you get AutoShip. And, of course, that Silver Bullet are concentrated colloidal silver that is concentrated to 30 parts per million in a deionized water base. It stores for years. Again, you can get that for 15% off, an additional 10% off just for the next 24 hours at InfoWarsLife.com. Now, Richard, you wanted to mention what's going on with the Democrats. We've got Bernie Sanders, people who are hopping mad, and they wanted to give Hillary a victory, razor-thin victory, as they were announcing her victory. As she was actually taking credit for the victory. I heard this as I was on my way home last night, her victory speech.
Well, basically, in a nutshell, a year ago, could we have imagined this situation?
Yeah.
So, to me, it's like, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Victory is, I mean, you know, victory for Bernie Sanders on the Democrat side is very super possible. Hillary is probably not going to make it. And, you know, she's got so many straws on that camel's back that I'll tell you
what. It was very telling. She comes out and says, whoa, you know, feel really, I don't know if she said lucky or whatever, but dodged that bullet essentially. And taking credit for a victory while it was still up in the air, literally with coin tosses and other things. When he came on, he was very, very reasonable. He said, well, it looks very close. It looks like it's essentially a 50-50. The results are not in, so forth and so on. And congratulated O'Malley for running an issues-based campaign and so forth. He was a real gentleman about it. But, of course, for Hillary, it was all about Hillary. It was classic Hillary Clinton.
Well, I'll tell you what. Donald Trump is really the one that put Bernie Sanders in the position to be able to challenge Hillary when they had that brouhaha in late December, early January about the misogynist when Trump fired back about Hillary being psychological, you know.
Because Hillary is just women. So weak. I mean, Bernie is so weak, he will not.
So all in all, it's good. Plus, Bernie has a war chest. He has, I think the number is 3.5 million donations at the average of $27 a piece.
Yeah.
Which is putting him, you know, in that $80 to $90 million range. Let's take that call, David.
Yeah, let's go to Adam in Iowa. Adam.
Yes, this is a question for Richard. We have 5 million people in the state of Iowa. and 1,406 Democrats voted, 550,000 Republicans voted. What's the, I mean, that's too big a difference. We have 2,500 people in this little town that I'm in, and our school was packed with Democrats. I'm
right.
a Republican.
I think what you're looking at is the vote totals are for the Democrats are put up as delegates, not as raw vote totals, right? Is that correct?
That's probably what the case is, delegates, because what they do is they have a mathematical formula where a certain number of voters equate to a certain delegate.
Yeah, what they do is they have a little bit of a difference. So when they have the Democrat caucus, the Democrats get together, they break into groups, and they're kind of openly negotiating with each other as to who they're going to vote for. Whereas with the Republicans, they have a speech, then they get together and have a traditional secret ballot. They report the number of ballots up, but the Democrats will report the number of delegates won. So the Democrats will apportion the delegates at the precinct level and then report that up. That's why you're seeing the really low numbers for the Democrats. That does look very funny.
Right. And as an example of that, the caucus that we were at, the Democrats had 137 people, bodies for Hillary, 110 bodies for Bernie. But they said that when they divided that out for the delegates, it was 4-4. It was a tie delegate-wise.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Richard Reeves. And, of course, you're going to be in New Hampshire covering the candidates, covering the campaign, and covering the election. Join us tonight at 7 Central 8 p.m. for the nightly news, the InfoWars Nightly News. It'll be hosted by Leanne McAdoo.